Well, I figure, you know, when you only do two shows a year, I mean, 7-hour show is probably about right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, one and all, and welcome to episode Who Gives a Shit of the Boss Wave podcast. I'm your host, Chris Williams, and joining me, as always, from sunny, sunny Milton Keynes, is Mr. Robin Brown.
Evening, Chris.
Good evening, Rob. And we do not have Pilch this evening, unfortunately, because he is working. But we do have the one and only Seth McNick.
Hello.
Hey, Seth.
Welcome guys, back. I'm gonna announce it right here at the beginning of the show. I'm announcing my return to the podcast because I've thought about it, and two episodes a year is something I can work into my schedule.
You say that you were half an hour late for this.
Oh, we said 2 o'clock. I was like 15 minutes late tops.
Funny. It took me 3 computers to get working those, because I've not used it in so long. All the updates and all that shit. Rob spent all his day doing this. He's been ready since like 1 second past 8. Good to go, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I've just been waiting around for months.
Just like waiting for the call. Get the gang back together. So we've been away for a while. All of us are a bit shit, really. We've not really talked to each other. So, yeah, everyone's really busy. Even though, like Seth pointed out, there's been a lockdown. We should have had loads of time on our hands, but it's not really the case. That's not how life works. Things get in the way, and for good reason, I guess, sometimes. So that's what's been happening. But we're all okay. There's been a lot going on in the news, in the gaming world. So we figured now would be a good time to do it. Why not? Give it a try. See if we can do this still. See if it's possible. We're just going to do a sort of standard show of what we normally do. Talk a bit of box at the start, which is this bit now, and then do some news and stuff, and then what we've been playing and that sort of thing. So same old shit, different year. I guess with a little bit of catch up, really. Seth, what have you been doing with your life for the last year?
Well, I mean, you say we don't talk, but we still have our chat that's been going for, I mean, it's like 7 years now, our little Facebook chat. So we're always catching up here and there. And you guys know, since I was last on an episode of Boss Wave, my life has wholesale changed some pretty big ways. Last year was pretty rough, but this year's been really good. I moved to a new city. I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin now. And as batshit nuts as this year has been, it's actually been a pretty good year for me professionally, and things are moving along pretty well, so I really can't complain that much. And
that's great.
But you know, everything's weird right now. Like time has no meaning. It's like the seasons changing here actually almost like shocks me back into like, oh yeah, that's right, time is real. Because ever since March, it's just been bizarro world. And I know for people that are just working from home, which a lot of people are, it's got to be even more drastic. For me, like I'm pretty much out and about every day. I do, you know, exterior restoration sales stuff that I've been doing a few years now. And so it's mostly outside, you know, pretty socially distanced, but I'm going from house to house. I'm driving around, you know, nice, enjoying the weather. I've got a tan, you know, like, so like I'm actually kind of out and about, but you know, things are still really weird though. I mean, I've only been to like a bar or a restaurant 3 or 4 times since the whole pandemic started. That it's just been like outdoor seating kind of situation.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I've barely been out. Been, I guess that's having a kid as well, but I've not really been out drinking much. We tend to do a lot of drinking at home and in other people's gardens, like barbecues, that sort of thing where we can. But we obviously had lockdown, which then went away and now seems to be potentially coming back again. We've all been mostly working from home. I do sort of half a week at home and half a week out and about, driving around, going to sites and stuff, you know, socially distanced site work and that sort of thing. So yeah, not a lot's changed. It's just we've been very, very busy this year. So I guess we're considered essential and key workers.
Yeah, we were here too.
So it's just sort of business as usual, really, just with the sort of obvious restrictions in place. But yeah, with the added having a kid on the side, which has been fun. So how about you, Rob? You've had a few changes yourself, right?
Well, I was working from home until I got made redundant and put on furlough. And so I had a few months where they're just looking for jobs and there was nothing around. And then just recently I got one. So I started like a week or two ago.
How was it?
It's a job, innit? I'd always wanted to be unemployed, but to be honest, you didn't really get to enjoy it because you're having to look for jobs all the time.
I know. I always wanted to be unemployed, and then it was terrifying, and you sat around going, "Oh God, this is the worst." Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm glad you found something. Is it not quite as convenient as your old place?
No. Well, I live in Milton Keynes, and before I was working in Milton Keynes. Now, the office is in Leicester, but right now it's all working from home. But when officially we go back, I should only be having to work one day a week
office. You have to drive all the way up there. Okay.
So it's about an hour, but yeah, I should only have to do that one day a week.
I mean, that's not too bad. I mean, my office is an hour from home as well, I'm only going up there to collect site kit and, you know, maybe once or twice a week even now. Although we've just taken on a new guy, so I'm going to have to go up to the office quite a lot more and get embedded in, get him used to working with us and that sort of thing. So
it is weird starting a new job while not being in an office.
Mm.
And just lots of video calls.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and avoid that as much as possible. But
you guys using Skype a lot, I assume? Lots of Skype?
Teams.
Teams.
I was making a joke because nobody uses Skype anymore, but Teams, I've heard that one.
That's basically the replacement for Skype. It's Microsoft.
Yeah, so yeah, use Teams for everything as well. It's quite good. It's a bit more flexible sending stuff to and from each other, and yeah, once you get used to it.
Through going through interviews and stuff, I've used just about every single one. It was like I think I did use Skype at one point, used Teams, Zoom. I think there's one called BlueJeans. I was using that.
That was the Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom. I've never heard of Zoom 2 years ago. Now that's like the biggest thing on the planet since the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy how that just all of a sudden came out of nowhere for me. It was good though. It was really good to have it and that everybody was jumping on and it always worked really well.
I wonder with that Teams, with the new thing they have, if they're using the Beam technology, which became Mixer, and now Mixer's gone, but they still own that streaming tech. So I wonder if that's being integrated into that.
Well, Microsoft owns Skype, didn't they? So I presume it's just that tech.
Yeah, you would think, but Skype kind of got they haven't really done anything with it for years now.
They added a record function.
that was the best thing that ever happened to our podcast. And that's saying something. So yeah, so everyone's okay. That's great news. We're all still alive and we're all still kicking. Is everyone getting a chance to play many games? I'm really not playing that much, but trying my best, fitting bits and bobs in here and there. Did you get a fair bit done when you were off, Rob?
Sort of the weird thing is, I think I'd played a couple of big games before I actually got put on furlough. And then when I did, there wasn't that much other I was that interested in playing. So I played a few sort of older things that I had kicking around, watched a lot of TV and other stuff. I almost finished Netflix.
Finished it, mate.
I get a chance. I play pretty regularly still, but what I've really realized the last couple of years, and I probably talked about this a year ago when I was on last time, but with this job now, like it's just. By the way, I highly recommend seasonal work. It's fantastic. Like, you know, it's not like I'm laid off, quote unquote. Like I'm just commissioned, so you just make enough money in that part of the year, and then I pretty much have like a legit. Like at least 3 months where I don't really have to do almost anything. Like if I'm working more than 2 or 3 hours a week in that 3 months, that'd be crazy. What I'd done the last couple winters now is like, I've played the really big games. Like I blew through God of War and, well, I played Crackdown 3, which I love that one year, you know, when it was kind of getting into the spring, and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Some of those big games is what I play in my off season. So I'm like about a month away from probably jumping into whatever big game it's going to be next, where it'll just be the kind of thing where I can sit down and play for 2-3 hours at a time with no interruptions and really sink into it. But right now, the kind of games I play are smaller games. Like, I pick up games where it's just, I've actually even gotten a little more into some of the little roguelikes where you can just do runs, you know, which I've never been super into. But just those kind of games where I don't feel like playing 10 or 15 minutes is going to screw the experience, you know, because you can't play a game like God of War and just play it for 15 minutes at a time. You don't have any time to like sink into it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been this time of year, even TV, honestly, like Netflix, I have a whole list of shows that are like the real, you know, hour long episodes, 3 seasons deep, sink into it. Like, I don't even watch that stuff right now, because if I do that, I end up staying up till 2-3 in the morning, and then I'm fucking exhausted the next day. And I'm always getting interrupted by work stuff in the evening. You know, I can't sink into it the same way I want to. So I like this whole season, like I'm watching like 30 Rock and Seinfeld reruns, you know, just little quick bites that I can kind of half pay attention to. But as soon as, I mean, literally it's about a month away, I'm going to be sinking into all that stuff.
Been kind of similar with the TV shows, because as a result, I've ended up watching quite a lot of anime again. I haven't watched anime in ages, but so getting back into that.
Actually, you know, a quirky little thing, this is kind of anime-ish. On Hulu, they have all the Thundercats episodes, and even though there was only quote-unquote 2 seasons, there's 65 episodes a season. There's like 130 episodes of Thundercats. And you wouldn't want to pay too close of attention, you know, because it's like, it is a kid's show and it's very simplistic, although I do enjoy it.
Yeah, I do.
Having it in the background with all just the voices and the little sound effects and the familiar old, you know, music. Oh, it's very just kind of great. Yeah.
I've had it on and kind of with Anya sometimes as well. And I've enjoyed it. I'd forgotten what an absolute useless piece of shit Lino was. He's like, falling down hole.
He's actually supposed to be a child, if I remember right.
Yeah, there is the weird thing where like something with his cryo chamber on the way there, you know, from Thundera to Third Earth. He aged when the other little kit and whatever just stayed the same age. Yeah.
Yeah. So he ends up waking up like still like this 8-year-old with a massive penis. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh yeah. That penis episode. That's right, Chris. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Well, no, Chitara had no clothes on to start with. Right. She's just walking around topless.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Very shit confusing. That's a 5-year-old back watching that in 85.
That just makes me think of all of the weird names for characters in Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
Which ones?
Fisto was my favorite.
Fisto.
Oh, Ramba. Well, ironically, Kit Fisto is one of my favorite Star Wars characters. But I did watch a little He-Man, and it's also kind of comforting and fun and an old nostalgia. But I feel like Thundercats, for some reason, holds up a little better for adult viewing than He-Man does. He-Man's a little sillier.
They've done a new Thundercats, haven't they?
There was one in 2011 or something like that, and they've just redid it like almost the same, but slightly more modern. And yeah, it was all right. I didn't watch much of it, but yeah. What does stand up is Ulysses 31. If you ever watch that, I say it stands up. It's still really cheesy as shit.
Well, that was one of those ones where I think it was like a combination of France and Japan, so it was like Japan animated. So there's got an anime quality to it. It's French. Same with Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Yeah, well, that's really good as well. But the Ulysses 31. Someone's done I've been watching those too. we've all got really regressed. I've got a kid. That's my excuse. But yeah, Ulysses 31. Someone went through and HD remastered them, like some fan project, and they just went through and stripped out all the shit and made it all look, like, cleaned it up a bit. So that's cool. Yeah, I've downloaded all those Dogtanians and other stuff.
If you got Disney Plus, then you've got access to all the like DuckTales and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, and like the old Marvel cartoons from the 80s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The weird thing about some of those, like the late 70s into the 80s cartoons, like the one that does Thundercats and that they did Brave Star, which is like a weird...
Yeah, I remember that.
I used to love Brave Star as a kid.
Yeah.
Yep. So
Speed of Puma.
Oh, I think back in the day, didn't I put that song on one of our episodes?
Probably.
I think I did. You know, like their American animation, like it, because it's kind of the same style as even like the Lord of the Rings cartoon ones, you know, like the Hobbit and stuff. And like some of those guys, I swear, even like very similar, like they look like the goblins, like the bad, some of the bad guys in Thundercats, and like some of the voices. Like I feel like the voice of Mumra might be the guy who did Gollum in the cartoon. Like it's very, sometimes very similar.
They used to have a bit, sometimes a bit of a sort of Hanna-Barbera quality to them.
Mass Crusaders.
Yep. Funimation, well. I think, was what the company was, right? Funimation. Filmation, yeah. Is that what it was?
Funimation's a Japanese company, I think.
Oh, Filmation is maybe what it was. But the funny thing is, even though it's not very, like, super anime, and it is a little more just kind of that squiggly, cheap American style from that period, it, if you look in the credits, like, all the animator names are all, like, Japanese names. So there's definitely some crossover there.
Oh, I mean, back in the day, there was some pretty ropey looking anime. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, true. Yeah. Yep. Well, welcome to the 80s Cartoons podcast.
I know. Well, that's it. I mean, it's a big interest of mine, and I could listen to people talk about it for hours on end because I still love watching all that shit every now and then. As I say, it's great having a kid because you can put it on, and she doesn't give a shit, and she goes and does something completely different while I sit and watch Thundercats. So everybody wins. Good stuff.
Nice.
Right. Shall we start and talk about some news? Because there's been some bombshells this last couple of weeks. I think Seth's probably got some stuff to get off his chest. So let's move on and talk about some news.
News. News. This is the news.
So, yes, this week was the big one. Xbox has bought Bethesda for what? $7.5 billion? Something like that?
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, man, that, I don't think it's, I think everybody would agree, it's not a, it's not hyperbole to say it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest news stories in video game history practically. I mean, there's never been a time where an entire big publisher with huge franchises has just been bought wholesale like that.
It's, I mean, it's the second biggest buyout from what I remember.
In what game, was the biggest? Or what?
Tencent bought the company who made Clash of Clans for 8.6.
Oh, so money wise, yeah. But, yeah. Okay, yep. You know, the Blizzard Activision merger was massive, but that didn't it didn't change their third party availability in any big way. Although Activision, you know, the way they do shit is pretty junky. Anytime they absorb developers, they just eventually become a Call of Duty support studio when they used to actually make games, you know?
Well, I think I saw something that was talking about, I can't even remember how much it was now, but they paid more for this than Disney paid for Star Wars.
And Marvel combined.
Yeah.
Although they bought Marvel quite a long time before Marvel became massive.
Before they turned it into what it was, yeah, movie-wise. They also got that streaming tech that Bethesda had unveiled.
Orion.
At E3, yeah, Orion. So that actually, all the rumors are that's actually a fairly big part of it too. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm an Xbox guy, but over all the years, obviously, like, I always try to be as objective as I can, and I have mixed feelings about this. You know, there's some people who are, you know, there's lots of fanboys out there. There's always the context of fanboys on Twitter and different podcasts and stuff. And there's some Xbox fanboys who are like, oh, well, everybody's always complaining that they don't have exclusives. Well, now we got exclusives. And then they're like, well, you know, nobody complained when Sony bought Insomniac and has Spider-Man exclusive, but you know, those are not the same situations. You know, starting the initiative, which is building a studio, building your own IP, that's a pretty nice way to go if it works out. Buying a studio that you have, like Insomniac, you know, I don't think anybody should have been bitter. I don't think a lot of people even were bitter about it. They were already kind of a proxy Sonyo studio to start with, you know.
So pretty much with the exception of Sunset Overdrive, I think pretty much weren't all of their games Sony exclusives?
No, they They did a couple just third party publisher games as well. They did like Fuse through.
Yeah, I was going to say they did a few shits. Not well regarded, like first person shooters, but like I think the things that they were famous for mostly were things like Ratchet and Clank, and even the Resistance games, I suppose.
Yep. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I don't think anybody thought, oh, that was shitty. That they already had a great relationship, and it's kind of a marriage that made sense. And you know, buying a huge third party publisher and taking potentially, we don't know how it's all going to play out yet, but taking huge franchises that a lot of people love and making them exclusive on console. Although, again, the way Xbox is doing things these days, they are making things very easily accessible. You know, if it's on, like, you could literally be somebody that has a PlayStation and never buy an Xbox and just subscribe to Game Pass, and you could stream the games on a tablet or your phone and have a controller and play them that way. You could play them on PC. So, I mean, they're not creating a walled garden in a way that is not inclusive, but taking all of those third party huge franchises and saying, well, now you got to at least be tied into Xbox some way. It's a big move, you know? I think there is anytime you have anything big like this, and we haven't had anything quite this big, but anytime you have these big mergers and buyouts and studio shuts down, or studio, you know, people move on to a different studio, there's always reporting that happens, or like a week later or 6 months later or a year later, you hear like, oh, well, this is kind of what really happened, you know? And I'm sure there will be some of that. And I do wonder if Bethesda, because this is all, and again, if you get Seth on the podcast, you're going to get nerdy analysis, but Bethesda is not a publicly traded company, which is pretty rare for a company that size.
Well, that's, you know, like the thing. They didn't actually buy Bethesda. They bought ZeniMax.
Well, true. Yeah, the parent company. But they're also not publicly traded, is my understanding. And so the major shareholders in ZeniMax and Bethesda, you know, like, just to put like a fine point on it, Todd Howard, I believe I've even read some things over the years that he actually has like quite a bit of equity after all this time of them like keeping him on, almost like a Hauser type, you know, scenario where they're like, yeah, you know, we want you to stay and here's more, you know, he makes a lot of money and I think he has a lot of stock options. I don't know that, you know, proof wise, but I think that's true from things I've heard.
I think most of the production heads are like that.
Yeah. And if he made any less than like $150 million personally on this, I'd be really shocked. I think he just became like very, very, very independently wealthy. But you know, the people that own them, like the guy that's married to Wonder Woman, you know, Linda Carter is married to the guy who owned ZeniMax, you know, and, you know, that guy just personally probably made $3 billion. Like, it's crazy, you know? And so that purchase may have been kind of shopped out there. And so I get it. And I don't even totally disagree with it. I'm trying to be fair. If people are pissed, I don't blame them, but it just be aware that we may hear in the next 6 months or a year that, oh, by the way, Bethesda was kind of shopping anyway. They were shopping themselves, and it could have been somebody like Tencent who bought them, or it could have been somebody like Activision that just gobbled them up, or it could have been Sony, or it could have been,
I don't think, you know, Sony has the money.
That's probably true. Or it could have been somebody like, even though it sounds weird, Epic, you know, Epic is now big enough with all their Fortnite money. They could have made a purchase like that.
This
so,
is the thing with Xbox at the moment, because I mean, they were also keen on buying Warner Brothers, and presumably this deal was already in the pipeline when they were talking about that as well. Before Warner Brothers actually realized that they think their games were worth something. So, and I think there's been something recently that just said, Xbox is still looking for other stuff. And I think that they said, because buying things is easier than making them from the ground up. And then a lot of this is, it feels like...
that was Nutella. He should just not talk that much about video games.
Well, it's, I mean, he's right. But I think a lot of it is, it's not, they're not working in the same way as like the old companies, like Sony or whatever, buying a single developer because they want to make certain games. This is almost buying a catalog to add to Game Pass.
Yes. Yeah, it was a big, huge part of it, for sure.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, it might be quite nice for them to give Sony a bit of a kicking and not let them have certain things, but I think a large part of it would be, even without doing that, they could still release the games on Sony, but they're on Sony you got to pay full price, whereas on Microsoft you buy Game Pass, you get it all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, to pivot to that, I do think Starfield, if it actually is 2021, and we don't really know that for sure, it may not be, but if Starfield really is next year, that game to me will be that'll be the bellwether. Like, you'll figure out what Microsoft's going to do, because if they make that exclusive, even though Elder Scrolls 6 years later, and it's a big, you know, huge franchise that everybody loves and everybody knows, if they make Starfield exclusive, I would not expect that then, you know, we're talking 4 or 5 years down the road that all of a sudden Elder Scrolls is going to go totally multi-platform. I think once the precedent is set at some point, there still may be case by case on some level, but I think Starfield will tell us what's going to happen with that.
I think, didn't they suggest that basically Xbox were going to be more or less the same as ZeniMax, and that it was they're basically going to let Bethesda run themselves? I mean, they might have some rules. But then again, in some ways, that's probably a bad thing, because Bethesda have just been fucking stuff up for quite a long time.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best things about this, and you made a joke in our chat, like, you know, how do I feel about this because they just bought one of my least favorite companies, which is not entirely true, because I love a lot of the Bethesda content, and I think they have some really good developers and franchises. But, and I won't belabor the point on this, but, you know, I've been bitching about the way they conduct themselves, that even though they're kind of like this quote-unquote gamer-friendly single player, we know you guys want the games and we're not going to have microtransactions, and that kind of stuff is kind of great for gamers and gamers like it. But the way they've conducted themselves for years with studios and fucking around with that whole Prey thing and suing people just for having fan art sites for Fallout and trying to sue Mojang before, I think that was even before they were bought by Microsoft, over having a game called Scrolls, as if they own the word Scrolls now. Don't get me started on that shit.
Well, that's been in the news recently, isn't it? Was it Monster Energy stopped Ubisoft from calling it Gods and Monsters? Monster Hunter, though.
Oh, I know, but that was a pre-existing one, I guess. But I have a buddy who's a lawyer, and I said to him, and he actually agreed. I was like, we have to have some kind of fucking legal precedent set in the world where some new rule. Like, we need to, hey, whole planet, if you start a energy drink named Monster, first off, good job. That's a pretty good name for a stupid energy drink. That's pretty good. Well done. But that doesn't mean you own the fucking word Monster. It's a word, you know, like, that's it. Like, you can use it, but you don't own the word Monster. And there's no confusion of somebody calling a video game with the word Monsters in it. You don't own the word Scrolls, Candy Crush. You don't own the word Saga, you know, like, these fucking ridiculous lawsuits. They should have like major fines and penalties for ever engaging in that kind of nonsense, because all it is big companies just bullying smaller companies, usually, although Ubisoft is obviously pretty big, but usually just bullying somebody and saying, well, you don't want to go through the legal hassle of keeping this word, and so we're just going to bull you out of it.
Don't they say it's not necessarily something that they're massively invested in. It's usually a case of, if they don't do that, they're then worried that if something else does rip them off later in the day, the other company would be able to use this as an example.
Yeah, but, you know, well, anyway, we don't want to go too far on the rabbit hole, and I heard Chris yawn, I think, so
I nearly muted it,
precedent is a real thing, but there is also a real thing is just like pragmatism and common sense in the law, and like a judge or a jury, if you have a real trial about something, let's say another energy drink actually came out, or some coffee drink or some vitamin infused drink, and it's like a little bit different, and they called themselves like Monster Juice X. Well, that would be pretty obviously like, that would be confusing to a consumer in a real way, you know, like that they can make a claim to that and say, hey, they're fucking with our name because we are a drink called Monster Energy Drink. If you have a game called Gods and Monsters, there is 0.00% chance of confusion, and they fucking know it. Anyway, that's the end of that soapbox, but it's ridiculous.
Welcome to 2017.
So anyway, I mean, I have plenty to say, of course, but I'm curious what you guys think about it. And, you know, I always like predictions. I know Chris doesn't love predictions, but even like you know, predicting how some of these things are going to play out. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I think from my point of view, someone who's actually lost touch with gaming a lot over the last couple of years, not lost touch necessarily, but I wasn't interested in this, a lot of this stuff beforehand. I certainly not now. But from my point of view is, how does it affect me? And that's the selfish way of looking at it. I don't give so much of a shit about the sort of, who buys who for whatever other reason, but yeah, the fact that I'm not going to be able to play certain games. Yeah. If this happened a couple of years ago, I probably would have been really pissed off. I'd be like, yeah, all of a sudden I'm not going to be able to play all these games. We don't know if that's the case yet. They're probably not going to put the brakes on everything, and they'll pick and choose. They'll make us play all the shit games that we don't want to play, like Ghost Trip, whatever it's called. But yeah, out of all the their IPs, Bethesda's, I like Doom. I've only played about an hour of the new Doom. They've got like released two more since then or something. I've never liked Fallout, but I do like Skyrim. So if I couldn't play Elder Scrolls 6, I would be disappointed. But I'm at the point now where there's so many RPGs that I enjoy and want to play, and there's JRPGs that I've enjoyed way more than I enjoyed Skyrim, to the point where I'll probably just play the next Dragon Quest instead whilst everyone else is playing Elder Scrolls. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely, if all of those IPs weren't to come to PlayStation, I don't think I would consider buying an Xbox on top of a PlayStation as well. I mean, I just got way too many games to play as it is. If Elder Scrolls 6 came out and it was the second coming and everyone's saying this is the best thing in the world, you really have to play it, then I'd be pissed. In the same way that I couldn't play Ori and the Blind Forest, the sequel, whatever that's called, and I was considering buying it.
But you probably will be able to at some point.
I know, right? I have. I've just downloaded it for my Switch. It was just announced like last week and came out the same day. So I was on the edge of buying an Xbox or getting a PC that could play it, but I just thought I'd see how it played out, and yeah, they just released it on Switch. So you know, for me, and the same with any other purchases that these companies are doing and money hat deals and whatever, these days there's enough games. If there's one game that I really really wanted to play, then yes, I might be pissed off, but I think I can just accept it now. If they brought them, if all of a sudden Xbox bought EA, you're right. But if they, you know, we said that about Bethesda a few weeks ago, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, all the Mass Effect games were coming out on Xbox, then yeah, I'd be pissed, and I'd be buying myself an Xbox. But yeah, I mean, like they're making all these games and Game Pass available on all these other systems, you know, chances are I'll be able to play Elder Scrolls 6 on my Switch too, by streaming it or something, you know. So there's going to be ways and means of playing these games that aren't tradition. And like, as you say, as soon as we get better internet, you know, globally we get better internet and these streaming systems work a lot better, then that's going to be an option, so that I don't have to buy a brand new £400 Xbox to play just the one game that I want to play. I can get their deal for $14.99 a month and play the game I want to play for a couple of months and then cancel the deal. There's going to be a lot more options for people, and that's, I guess, is a really good thing of what Xbox are doing. And I can see that that's good, especially if they start letting Sony and Nintendo jump on board with a lot of this stuff and have Game Pass available on their systems.
It wouldn't surprise me if Xbox publicly suggested that Sony could have Game Pass, knowing that Sony would probably refuse.
Yeah, I agree.
In the same way when they were doing Minecraft and they said, yeah, you can have Minecraft, but you do have to log in into your Xbox account when you go into it.
Right, yep. The nice thing about Xbox, and again, this just goes back to like how the conversation started, you know, like I do see the downside, and I do think just that whole, you know, Nadella thing of that quote, it's just like kind of a tone deaf quote, like, well, it's hard to start a studio, so we just buy them, you know. It's like, it's not exactly how he said it, but that's kind of how it comes across. Like, we got a lot of money, it's hard starting stuff, why don't we just buy other people, you know. It's like, okay, but he's not wrong, because there is something in the industry. So one thing, I'm going to digress, of course, one thing about this purchase that is I think really good for Microsoft and is part of their plan is they actually added studios in a bunch of different cities that they're not currently in. And so they're different talent pools and they're different developer, kind of ecosystems in a way. So like they added, you know, DC, of course, is Bethesda, and the Bethesda or ZeniMax Online is out of DC. And they added two Austin studios in Texas, Arcane and the other Bethesda studio that's down there that I think did Fallout 76. They have added Lyon in France, where I used to briefly live. So that's kind of cool. And they added Madison, Wisconsin, where I used to live, with Human Head, which is now apparently Roundhouse. It'd be great if they just got their name back at some point through all this. They added, let's see, who else? Who are some of the other big studios, Robin, that came in this?
Was it Machine Gun Games?
Exactly. Stockholm, Sweden. You know, that's a huge, huge talent pool in Stockholm, Sweden, you know, because that's where like EA Dice is. Ubisoft has studios in over there. You know, so that I think is a big thing for them. And that's why there's been these rumors for a while that they want to add a Polish studio, because Poland has become like a huge development hub with all the subsidies from that government. You know, CD Projekt Red has grown so hugely, and Techland and People Can Fly and all those kind of things. So I think that's a big part of what they're doing is just, and this does lead back, the reason that digression happened is that when they say like, well, we're going to buy some of these teams that they fit our culture, even though in a way I think as a gamer, it's kind of like, well, that's kind of cheap, you know, like just because you got all the money, you just buy a team rather than like building your own team. But the reality in modern game development is if they just start another team in Seattle or Los Angeles, or even, you know, somewhere in France or Poland, really, you know, just like with the initiative, all they're really doing is just poaching people from other studios. You know, it's not like they're just like making a whole studio out of just fresh college grads. You know, like the initiative is a huge, you know, by Phil Spencer's quote, a quadruple A game. So we'll see what that means and how that plays out. But, you know, like it's a big studio, and they hired from Sony Santa Monica, the God of War team. They hired from Crystal Dynamics. You know, the head of the studio was formerly on Tomb Raider. They hired from Naughty Dog. They hired from, you know, so like in a way there is an argument to say like, well, if you have a good team that like, And somebody especially like, by the way, I think like your Obsidian, your In Exile, even like your Double Fine, for those studios, I think they genuinely, and here we are a year and a half, 2 years later with these guys, and they're like, this is great. You know, you're seeing now like with a game like Wasteland 3, whether it's your bag or not, they have said flat out, they're like, just look at this game. You know, like here's this, all this stuff right here we wouldn't have done if we weren't a Microsoft studio now, because they gave us a bunch of extra money and time to do that. And even though they're not even published, even though Wasteland 3 is not even published by Microsoft, Microsoft gave them more time and money, you know?
What are the next big games to come out of Bethesda? Because weirdly, the only two I can think of are both supposedly platform exclusive to PS4 or PS5, actually. New Doom's not out yet.
Chris, you were quiet there.
The new Doom isn't out, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's been out for a while.
Yeah, new Doom's out. So I think there was some DLC for it, too. Deathloop and Ghostwire are both, that's from Arcane and Tango Games in Tokyo, and they're both timed exclusives. Yeah. So they'll come to PS5 first. But we know Machine Games is working on something, because they finished Wolfenstein 2, and then they did that Youngblood game, which actually was co-development with Arcane and Lyon. And so you know either they're making another Wolfenstein game or hopefully a new IP. What was that, Chris?
Probably Trumpenstein. They're going to base a new game on this authoritarianism, this Trump regime where he's going to enslave us all.
That's the weird thing. I'd say like back in the day, I would have classed Bethesda as being possibly my favorite game studio from things like Skyrim and Fallout and all that kind of thing. But then, as with a lot of things more recently, things like, I mean, Fallout, I actually lost interest in that on Fallout 4, which was as a good game. That not even including Fallout 76. And the fact that they just keep reselling Skyrim and not actually fixing any of the bugs in it. So as a result, as Bethesda as a game producer, I don't, well, a developer, I don't necessarily trust them that much anymore, so I'm not sure about that. Most of their other games, I mean, I played the Doom, the new Doom, and that was all right, but not necessarily my kind of thing.
Yeah,
same,
not my thing.
Same with Wolfenstein. I think I'm too old to be playing these like really quick, fast-paced games anymore.
Wolfenstein really quickly. I don't know what. Yeah,
but the but as a result, so there's, I mean, weirdly, out of all of the developers that have been bought up by Microsoft, I'd probably say Ninja Theory was the one that sort of irritated me most.
Yeah, I mean that sort of was the first one that was quite big and was like made me start to think, actually, if they keep doing this could be bad, because that was a good game. Again, I didn't finish it, but
well, I mean the rumors about. I really enjoyed that game, and also pretty much all of their other games as well have been pretty good. I mean,
yeah, as much one of my favorite games ever.
As much maligned as it was, DMC was a pretty good game. And so yeah, that became more of an issue for me. And for me, I would only ever really buy one console. I can never justify buying two. So it's always going to be a case of the one that has the exclusives that appeal to me more. And historically, that's always been Sony, probably because they had the original PlayStation before the Xbox ever came out. So I've had the through line of all of their exclusives. But then again, I tend to like new games as well. And I think the disappointment with buying things like buying a new developer rather than creating one from scratch is when you create one from scratch, they'll probably be making new games as well. Whereas you're buying a developer, you're essentially just buying, or in a lot of cases, you're just buying their back catalog, and so you're just going to get more games from the same franchises.
Well, see, that's interesting, because like when you mentioned Ninja Theory,
but yeah.
Right, when you mentioned Ninja Theory, I would class that in the same thing as Obsidian and In Exile and Double Fine, where I think Ninja Theory has also, I mean, first of all, hey, it's PR, right? Of course they're going to say the nice things, because they're part of the company. They're not going to be like, oh, this sucks. But you know, those kind of acquisitions, I think all of those developers, probably like, you know, the guys like Tim Schafer, Fergus Urquhart at Obsidian, what's his face at In Exile, you know, those guys probably, I'm sure they made a lot of money on it. I'm sure they made a lot of money on those acquisitions, but those acquisitions didn't feel as much about just like the big payday the way Bethesda does. That's why this happened. It was a lot of money for a few people, you know. But those actually felt like Microsoft buying them and backing them and letting them hire new people that they needed for certain things for a long time and giving them more time on games, or they're not feeling pressured and always singing for their supper, going to every third-party publisher trying to get things approved and then games get canceled. You know, those developers, I think, are truly benefiting in like a quality of life and an ability to deliver games. And I think with Ninja Theory, they have all the freedom in the world, it seems like, to make new franchises and do things they want and try new things. And so, I mean, I think overall, as long as you can find access to those games, those things are good for gamers. I truly believe that.
But with Bethesda,
it's harder to make that case exactly, because they weren't hurting for cash. You know, they weren't like hamstringing their development, and they weren't, you know what I mean? Like, That's just like a big, big money purchase.
I did see a suggestion that Microsoft would be out looking for like a Japanese publisher.
I hope that doesn't happen. They actually did just say, by the way, today that is not happening. Like in terms of at the TGS or whatever the thing they're doing, they actually put a tweet out that says there will be no new acquisition, you know, things.
Okay.
Now they did get Tango Gameworks. That's part of Bethesda, so they do have a Japanese studio now. Which also, like, it really leads me to one other thing about Bethesda. I really wonder, all these deals, that these are always, again, stories that usually come out later, a few weeks, a few months, a year, or whatever. But like, you remember when BioWare was bought by that Elevation Partners, and then Elevation Partners turned around and sold it to EA, right? So the doctors, as they called them, you know, Ray Mizuka and whatever, they had a deal. They had like an exclusivity contract for 5 years. They had to stay there to like shepherd the transition. They had to stay at least 5 years. And then those two guys at exactly the 5-year mark, they were like, peace, we're out. They like immediately left. And Now, you hope that doesn't happen with Obsidian and In Exile and especially Double Fine. I hate to see Tim Schafer leave anytime soon, but you, those could happen because you assume those all do have exclusivity deals where they say, like, yeah, you're going to give me a lot of money and I am going to agree to stay on here and make cool games. By the way, those guys are all kind of at an age where they may just be saying, hey, I just got a nice big payday and now this is going to be my swan song. I'm going to make two or three more great games and then just literally full on retire. If you're a guy like at Arcane, like Harvey Smith, or you're that guy at Tango Gameworks that used to work on Resident Evil, if you're some of these guys that are a little younger, like the big guy at Machine Games, I think is only in his late 30s, they might be saying, okay, I'll take the big payday and I will sign this agreement for the big payday to stay 5 years. But those guys might be the kind of age where after the 5 years they go, okay, now some other publisher will pay me a buttload of money to start a new studio. You know what I mean? So those are real considerations. And I do wonder, like Todd Howard and those kind of guys, what they agreed to as a part of this. You know, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I'm thinking the weird one with like Japanese studios would be ones like Platinum. I wouldn't be surprised if they could be bought out or anything like that. But yeah, that'd be kind of weird.
The only way, I mean, obviously money talks. If they had enough money, they can buy just about anybody, I guess. But, you know, like a studio like Platinum, I don't know why they would want to do it unless Xbox makes real meaningful inroads with the xCloud streaming services, because that's apparently their new Japanese play. That's their strategy. And by the way, that kind of makes sense, because then you're not trying to get a bunch of Japanese people to buy a box when, especially they're like very into mobile gaming even more than we are over here. And, you know, like the Switch is really big over there and the 3DS. And if they say, hey, now there's this thing, you just hook on a controller to your phone and you can be playing all these AAA games. And by the way, we've got some great, you know, content in this system. Maybe you do make inroads. And then if you have like a good, healthy ecosystem over there where people actually are engaging with Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo, then maybe something like a Platinum, you make the case to them like, hey, you know, we can get your games all around the world. Then maybe it makes sense. But if you're Platinum, like, why would you want to go in the Xbox ecosystem right now? Because, you know, it's not the audience as much still.
Well, I mean, they've more or less been for hire for quite a few different, like, they've also done a few Nintendo things, but yes. They tried to do an Xbox thing.
Yeah, I mean, that may have left a sour taste in their mouth with that, but you're right. That in that case, they are the perfect example of a studio that's always singing for their supper. They're always going to a new publisher. They're always doing a new game and hoping these games don't get canceled. And then, yeah, if they had the security of joining somebody like a Sony or a Square Enix or...
Yeah, I was going to say Square Enix would be another one that I could see, because I think they've had money problems for a bit as well.
Yep. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, we've talked it all around it, I guess, but I do think, I mean, I always use the word interesting. It's the most overword used ever, but I'll be super interested just to see how this plays out. I mean, some people are like, oh, bank it. You know, they're going to release every one of these games day and date on PlayStation because there's just too many people that have PlayStations. And they're not going to give up all that money. But I think that's actually a very bad take. I think if they do decide to release something big like Fallout or Elder Scrolls on Sony, which they may do, I think, yeah, sure, money matters. They'll make a lot of money selling it on there. But I think Xbox, every person they can bring into the Xbox ecosystem, whether it is on a just bespoke box, whether it's on an Xbox Series X or Series S, whether it's on the streaming thing as that continues to grow, it's on Game Pass, or whether it's on PC, that brings a lot of value to Xbox. So they didn't pay $7.5 billion, in my opinion, to not have a lot of these games be exclusive. I think they're going to be exclusive in some manner, is my opinion, but we'll see how it plays out.
The trick is obviously that the way they're working is completely new. This is a new way of doing things. Sony are basically still doing the old way of doing things.
Yes.
So the question is, can these two methods actually work together? Because if they can't and one succeeds, which you'd assume it'd be the new way of doing things, then that's sort of hands Microsoft a monopoly.
Yeah, I could see how you... I think Sony needs to evolve, and if Sony wasn't so successful this past generation, they would feel more pressure to evolve. But right now, they're just
The Microsoft approach is Netflix, really. That's essentially what they're going for.
In a way. I hope it never goes quite the way of Netflix, but you do worry the more games, especially the more first party games that they're funneling into it, the more marginalized those games kind of can become. They're just part of the steady march of content.
Yeah.
And even Saeed, how do you pronounce his first name? That Nadella. He even said that in his comments, which again kind of makes me cringe because he's like, "Yeah, well, content is really important." Mm. It's like I hate the word fucking content. Like, I use it too, but
it removes all art from it, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I think even Netflix, they let their creators go pretty wild. They don't put a ton of constraints on them. They let them. They want to fill interest. Niches. They want to fill those different like interest niches, so they do let the creators be pretty creative. But then, yeah, from the top level down, they are just looking at, okay, we just got to have this steady stream of content. And what are the numbers? It's content. And I don't like that. Video games are in some ways going that way quite to that degree. And there's a lot of market forces in games that are causing that. One thing I just brought up was like with those creators, like Brian Fargo is his name. I forgot that. He's the InXile guy. And again, the Obsidian guy. And you got, all those guys in a lot of those studios, they are all of an age where they're around 50 or above. I think the guy from Obsidian might be like 60. And so they're all kind of at an age where these moves are partly for them are kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to cash out. I'm going to make a few more games and then I'll actually retire and be done. Mm. But when you look around the industry, there are tons of those guys actually, like, the heads of these studios, even like Insomniac, Ted Price, he's up there. He's like in his 50s. He's been around forever, and there's nothing wrong with that. They do a good job and they've built great brands and great studios. But those guys are guys that they're not like they're more talented than any of the younger talent these days. Like the best people are the best people. It's not like they were so unique. It's just that they got into the industry at a time when they were unique. There wasn't a lot of those studios, and they made it through that early time and built up, when Naughty Dog was making Crash Bandicoot back in the day or whatever it was, that was just like a big splash of influx of cash for those studios. And now a lot of those same guys back from the 90s, they're still the heads of all these studios because they were pretty young when it started. And you don't actually have a lot of younger heads of these big, big studios. So it's like kind of a weird generational problem that the old guard from the early 90s are still kind of in charge of everything. And I think that's a part of the reason you see so many, like, it's almost unhealthy for the industry how many indies there are now. It got to the point where it was really cool. Like, oh man, look at all this choice. Look at all these cool little indie games. And then like, they're trying different things and they're giving us different ideas, and that's so awesome. And now I think it's gotten to the point where as a consumer, it's just the long tail. You can't even focus on anything. You can't even like, you see so many games, you're like, well, I have no time to even think about that. I can only focus on a fucking 100 games at a time,
It's absolutely saturated. The market is saturated.
Totally.
It's great. It really gives us so much choice, but me and Rob both love, for example, Metroidvania games. And now we could go to any of our store of choice and buy 10 of them that we haven't played. And they're all getting 9s out of 10s in magazines, whatever. And they're good, well-reviewed games. And there's just so many of them. And that we can't really complain about that. But the fact that people are just going to keep continuing to make them. It's insane, really.
Part of it is the market forces, though. I want to finish this up, Rob. But it's market forces, I think, that are causing a huge amount of this. Because if you do have certain studios like, like Jonathan Blow, and he's an interesting cat, right? Like he's going to do his own thing no matter what the market forces are. You have like the Behemoth, you have like the Clays, you have some of these like little indie developers like Supermassive, or Supergiant or whatever, like that makes those little like the Hades, they just made Hades, those kind of studios, they were going to be independent no matter what, right? But there are, I think there's a lot of independent developers out there that are kind of making their way, and even some of these double A games coming back, and they're doing little projects. And it's not so much because they wouldn't want to work on big AAA games. It's not so much because they don't like that ecosystem. It's because they're tired of working for people. They actually want to own their own company and be in charge, because they should be able to. Like, they're good enough and they're talented enough to do it. But those jobs are just not available in those big companies, because there's so much of that old generation just holding on and holding on up in their 50s and early 60s right now.
Do you think, going back to Xbox and the sort of the next Netflix model perspective, do you think that they, on this problem, potential problem of saturation over time, that we're going to get to the point where, like, okay, these big developers, the people that make Fallout or whatever, that they're just going to get lost in the shuffle? And okay, they're still, the franchises that are big are going to still be known about, you know, but it's new IP, and it's going to take word of mouth for these new games to come out, because there's so many games.
So basically, they get the Steam problem.
Mm.
I mean, for me, I'm thinking a lot of my favorite games over the last, certainly the last generation, but for quite a while, have been these kind of big first party exclusives, like mm-hmm. Nintendo ones and Sony ones generally. And it's usually because of the level of polish in there, the level of ideas and what they've had to do, primarily because those games aren't just there to make a game, they're there to sell the system.
Exactly, yes.
And I've seen it mentioned before, and I think it is probably a bit of paranoia in there, but they don't know. But the suggestion with Xbox, it feels like rather than selling a system, they're selling Game Pass, and the console is there to service Game Pass. And once you've got there, does it end up becoming quantity rather than quality? And it, like Steam has been basically for quite a long time, where there's just influx of just shit. Then the amount of stuff that you got there. Because I found it kind of weird how, like, because like the PC Master Race are always going on about how, like, the PCs can be much more powerful than the consoles. Yet generally it always seemed to be that some of the best looking games were consoles games, primarily because they could put all of that effort and money into a game that wouldn't necessarily be viable on a PC.
Yeah. 100% agree. I mean, that's the big draw for a lot of these studios that go into those studio systems, is like, they know that they're going to get money and they're going to get time and they're going to get kind of left alone in a way that you don't get when it's a third party publisher who's just looking at a product release and they want to see a return on investment, and they're going to be looking over your shoulder. If you're Double Fine, like, it's still like, even to this day, I'm surprised that happened, but am I getting echo?
No.
I think they just saw, like, okay, that we're kind of like a prestige, quirky purchase for Xbox, and we're going to add to their catalog. And they want us to make cool, weird stuff. They just want us to do that because there's like a certain interest level, and they know that'll bring some people into the Xbox ecosystem, and it'll fill a niche in the release schedule. And then they just get to do what they want to do. They just get to make the fun games they want without a lot of publisher oversight. And so I think that's very attractive.
Do you think these guys are going to have the free rent? If you think about, say, the Fallout devs, again, as an example, if they're going to make a new IP, do you think Xbox is going to support them with the huge, what, quadruple A are we at now? Whenever we get to 5A, then how much that's going to cost to make a game? Are Xbox going to throw the money at that and say, yeah, we trust you to make a 5A quint 8A game? Are they going to do that, or are they just going to say, well, yeah, people are going to buy Game Pass anyway, whatever you put out, so don't bother spending X amount of money on it, spend half the amount, people will still buy Game Pass for it?
Or it could go the opposite way, where basically if Game Pass is so successful and they've got so much stuff on there that Microsoft don't really care or have the time to micromanage all of them, so they do just let them do what they want, because in the same way that with your Steam, they clearly don't care about the actual stuff that's going on Steam, because they're making all the money from it, so they let them do what they want. You could get some really interesting stuff out of that.
There's going to be certain people that do take the opportunity to spend the time and money to make something amazing and make their dream game, and you might get some amazing stuff out of it.
I was just thinking about it, because it's not even necessarily true anymore. Well, I'm thinking of Netflix. Netflix have actually made some really good stuff, But still, when you go and see, look at the movies that are coming out, and one has the little Netflix logo that suggests that they made it, you still sort of, well, I don't know if it's everyone else, but I still look at it and think, nah, it's probably not going to be that great then, is it?
It's probably like a straight-to-DVD type film.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily even true anymore, but it is. It's always in the back of your mind.
But then you start to get these weird, on Netflix, and I'm guessing it'll be the similar thing with Xbox, where you start to see these big actors coming in doing like random Netflix films. You're like, whoa, how did they get them to do that? And then I guess Xbox will be bringing in these random people that are just because they got that clout.
I mean, essentially, it comes down to the fact that I don't particularly like change, and so it worries me, especially since of more recent years. Generally, it feels like everything that's changed has become worse. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Xbox's approach, I definitely can see the positives, and I can see why they're doing what they're doing, and I can absolutely respect that it's probably a really good way to go, and that it's going to benefit a lot of people. And once the technology gets there with these things, and you know, I, at the moment, I can't see myself sitting down and connecting a controller to my phone or my laptop, because I just don't play like that. But if they start getting in with, they say, Samsung or smart TVs, so that they can connect, you know, better than Stadia, clearly, if they can do the Stadia thing through smart TVs, and they can just be an Xbox app on my TV, and my controller just works with it, and I can have Game Pass, and I can just pay 15 quid a month and play all the Xbox games, I would probably do that, because I haven't got to spend 400 quid on a box. And I can just, but I want to wait until that technology is there, and then think about it.
Hopefully, they don't do the sort of Disney thing as well, because I mean, certainly some of these Bethesda titles are massive. Like whatever the next Elder Scrolls come out, that is going to be huge. Maybe what if they do the sort of Disney Mulan approach, where you bought Disney Plus, and then they ask you for more money for the film.
I think
the only reason that happened is because of the pandemic, and otherwise Mulan would have been in the theaters, and they were like, well, Jesus, we spent a lot of money on this shit, we can't just put it in Disney Plus. So that was kind of shitty, but I don't see that happening, but I think there's valid concerns of how Game Pass evolves, maybe in a Netflix type way over 5 and 10 years, and how that changes how they interact with these teams as people leave. And if they're just like, now you just got to become a sequel factory, like, which they already, by the way, have done with Gears and Halo. You know, that's just like just over and over.
Well, I was thinking, you know, with all of these new developers that they've bought, I was trying to think about what games have actually been announced from them. Because, so, I mean, Ninja Theory has got Senua Sacrifice 2. Mm-hmm. Double Fine have got...
Psychonauts 2 is coming next year.
Yeah, yep. Psychonauts 2. So they're sort of the only one. I mean, I'm sure there's probably loads that I don't know of, but the ones I do know of always seem to be just sequels to existing stuff.
That I would pretty much disagree with. I mean, Psychonauts, but you know, the last Psychonauts was what, 15 years ago or more.
Yeah, but still.
True, but it's not like it's been like, oh, here we are on Psychonauts 7, like Ratchet and Clank. And no offense to Ratchet and Clank, I like Ratchet and Clank, you know, but they have that big Everwild game that they've just kind of been teasing a little bit and showing some gameplay or some in-engine stuff that from the Sea of Thieves from Rare.
Okay.
They have they showed that little teaser for Avowed, which is really funny because that's from Obsidian, and they were basically showing like, hey, here's a big ass budget new thing that we're enabling Obsidian to do that will basically be a direct competitor to Elder Scrolls. By the way, a month later, we bought Elder Scrolls, you know.
Are we assuming we're never going to see another Outer Worlds?
Now that's an interesting conversation. And if anybody's listening to this and still actually staying with us in this conversation, some people might care about that. I have no idea. I would imagine there is going to be, and I think it's already in production, an Outer Worlds 2, even though it wasn't really my favorite thing, by the way. It's just Fallout in space.
That's primarily why I didn't play it.
Why I wanted to try it.
I should have liked it, because that's the kind of thing, like a new kind of thing, Fallout Skyrim, but set in a new world. That's why I like the idea of, was it Starfield or whatever? But the fact it was classed as being quite a lot like Fallout, I'm just so tired of Fallout.
And me too.
I'm not even willing to play a game that's like slightly like it.
No, I totally agree. But now that this thing has happened, you know, Obsidian, all the buzz right now, and it would be a huge release, and everybody would then kind of, well, at least a lot of people that were super fans would care about Fallout again, is if they did New Vegas 2. So, you know, could I see them saying, hey, why don't we shift your team over to that and give everybody what they want? I could see it.
I think if they do, they should do it in the Outer Worlds engine. Because from what I understand, that was much more stable than whatever the fuck Bethesda had been using.
Yeah, I think it was more stable. Although, here's the thing, because now they have that new engine, because like Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 are not releasing in the same old engine. So now they have that. And now,
is,
you know...
Is it a new engine, or is it an update of the old one like the other ones?
Well, the way Todd Howard described it is it's a new engine, but then... At least the last time I heard about it, and I would imagine now, this is getting really fucking granular, but I would imagine they're going to announce at some point in some little interview that this has even changed. But Starfield apparently was still going to be on their old animation tech, and their animation tech, you know, from Bethesda is always terrible. Like, everybody just looks like they're running like a robot, you know? I would imagine that now with Microsoft and the extra money, they're probably going to be able to update all of that. But my understanding is the Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 will be on entirely new, from the ground up, new engines, which, fingers crossed for that shit.
I think that's their plan for Sony. They're going to release Elder Scrolls 6 on the Xbox on their new engine, and they'll release Elder Scrolls 6 on PlayStation on the PS3 engine for Skyrim.
That's funny. They'll say, yeah, you can have this, but only if you do it on emulated cell processor tech. Yeah.
Sony have confirmed they're not doing as well, haven't they?
It gradually gets slower as you play it.
I do think that's a bad mistake from Sony not supporting their older platforms.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Jim Ryan guy, and I don't need to go off on him, but I think he's a little bit of a new Matrick. I think you got a bad Matrick on your hands. We'll see. Sony just has such a great place in the industry right now because they do have just really good studios, some really good games. And, you know, the controller last generation was so much better than the PS3 controller. And this new one looks even better. It looks really cool. So, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on with Sony, but they're really less resting on their laurels in a lot of ways just because of their successful position. And I do think it will be eroded this generation, because Xbox is going to look at it like, hey, if we sell 40 million Xboxes, and again, what do generations even mean now? I don't know. But if they say, hey, if we only sell 40 million Xboxes, but then we have another 15 million people playing on streaming, and then we have another 25 to 40 million people playing at least a couple Xbox games just through Steam or on PC, you know, once they hit 100 million users, Xbox is going to feel pretty damn good about that. And they're not going to care if Sony sold 85 million PS5s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, Game Pass is, man, it's, you know, for better or worse, I think for the good, but it is now, it has everybody's attention. There's no question about that, because everybody could kind of make fun of Xbox for a while and be like, oh, you had Matrick and you fucked up Xbox One launch so bad and you lost this generation. But everybody, including Sony, is understanding that Game Pass is a force in the industry now. Like, on every podcast, I've listened to PlayStation podcasts, and they've literally had guys on there like, yeah, Game Pass is the best deal in the industry right now. It's amazing, you know? Like,
it is. It stresses me out, though, thinking about it. With the back catalog that I've got and the game, I'm still buying games like they're going out of fashion, even though I've not got time to play with them more than 10 minutes at a time. But the thought of having another massive library is just really stressful.
I've actually stopped buying as much.
Like, yeah, I've stopped. Yeah, oh, I've been, not, like, I already have everything I need.
I'm buying it all on Switch.
There's some big stuff that I know will be good and I know I'll like, but I've still not bothered getting them. Things like Last of Us 2, Ghost of Tsushima. Partially,
you
Last of Us,
you done
just waiting for sales, or you wait for them to go on that new classic thing.
Waiting for sales. I have no need to get them straight away.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. And I feel like Last of Us 2, I want to play it.
That's going to be the same thing with the next generation as well. I looking at them, I mean, obviously, I tend to go PlayStation rather than Xbox, but even with PlayStation, I feel no need to get that straight away. It'll probably be quite a while, but if I do end up actually getting it.
And the thing I'm finding is the main thing now. everything's coming to Switch. Like all the PlayStation 3 games are coming to Switch. Like I've been playing Metro Last Light, and that's awesome, and it plays on Switch. And so there's so many cool games like Ghostbusters video game. Like a lot of games from PS3 era and even PS4 era are coming to Switch. The Fallout type game we've just been talking about, Outer Wilds, that's coming to Switch soon as well.
Yeah,
I'll probably pick it up on that, but you know, once it's in a sale. I don't know. Are you guys going to get the new consoles when they come out or soon after? I mean, I guess that's the next conversation.
I tried to pre-order yesterday and I got fucked. I couldn't get it.
Well, I mean, I didn't even buy the PS4 when it first came out. It was only when Destiny came out that I finally ended up getting it. So I'm not necessarily in any rush. Usually it's best to wait until the second version of it anyway, so that they've ironed out the kinks in them. But there's not really any big games. I mean, like, out of all the games they've shown, the one that looked the best was Demon's Souls, which I've already played to death. So I don't necessarily need to play that again.
I think the thing is, like, I really want to play the new Horizon Zero Dawn. And
I don't know when that's supposed to be out, though.
Those two games.
Well, and that's the nice thing is because Sony believes in generation. So when you play Horizon Zero Dawn and Spider-Man, you know that this is made only for next generation, and it could not possibly run on the blah blah blah, Jim Ryan.
They fucked themselves because that, you know, I was considering whether I needed to get a PS5. Now, if that Harry Potter game and Horizon would just on PS5. I may not have pre-ordered one now, but I would have been picking one up when those games came out. But now I'm like, well, how much better do they really look?
But I still did that when the PS4 came out. There's various games that were available on the PS3 and PS4. Things like the Assassin's Creed, I think Black Flag was, and there's a couple of others. But, I mean, even Destiny. But I didn't buy them at all, because I knew at some point I probably would get the new console. And then I figured I'd buy it then. And I think it was around that time when I was just playing loads of like indie games on PC. And at the moment, I feel like I've got a big enough back catalogue of other games that I can play. That's what I've been playing all lockdown, is games that I'd actually bought or had from various different other means, like PlayStation Plus and all that kind of stuff, and just never got around to playing.
Yeah, I mean, I see myself play as a more of a Switch player now. Literally, I've just played The Last of Us 2 on my PS4 in the last, I don't know, 6 months, probably longer. Probably even longer. So I'm mostly just playing stuff on Switch.
What now? That just came out.
But I've not really played. I didn't even have it plugged in for about 2 months. I went on holiday, took it with me, and then I came back, and I didn't plug it back in again for 2 months.
My wife's got into Animal Crossing, so I don't really have access to my Switch at the moment.
Oh, no. But even that, I don't play it very much. I play it for half an hour of an evening, and then, you know, I fall asleep.
Well, another thing for you guys, especially you, Rob, like, I see on your list, one of the games you're talking about that you've been playing, like, now Sony, and by the way, I would ascribe this directly to Game Pass, the pressure of that a little bit, but now they announced that kind of, like, whatever they call it, the PlayStation Classics or Big Hits or whatever are coming to PlayStation Plus eventually. Not day and date, might not be in the first year, but now, like Ghost of Tsushima, you could probably wait another year and then you just play it for free as part of PlayStation Plus.
I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily bet that they'd do that. I did hear a joke where they talked about the fact that people, because of the debacle with both of them trying to do pre-orders, and they're saying that there is a case of people accidentally buying the Xbox One X rather than the Xbox Series X.
Oh, that's there's an answer to that, by the way.
And they're saying maybe that's the trick with them calling it PlayStation Classic. They're hoping people will buy that shitty old PS1 Classic thing by accident.
So, I agree that the names of Xbox are stupid, by the way. I'm not one of these Xbox guys who's like a total apologist. I think they are confusing, and I know people who are confused by them. I even had a conversation with Stu Leck, shout out to Stu Leck, on Twitter, where he was kind of confused by it. And it is totally understandable why people are confused. It's not quite Wii U level to me, but it's close. And having said that, though, those stories are kind of clickbait, because it's not like 700 and whatever percent of people actually bought an Xbox One X. Those sales data from Amazon are meaning like how many like page lands. So it just means like people were searching Xbox Series X and ended up, whoops, I got on the wrong page. It's not like they actually went through and bought one by accident.
Put it this way, if Monster Energy Drinks owned the name of Xbox One X, I would say they would be within their rights to sue Microsoft for calling the next console Xbox Series X.
It's a very strange naming convention. That's not a win. That is not a win. I know it. I mean, I'm not confused by it at all, but I'm very plugged in. You know, like, I pay attention to this shit every day.
I mean,
I understand how the Xbox Series S is better than the One X, but it's not actually 4K. Like, I do understand that stuff. But if you're just, like, even, like, a casual gamer, or even, like, a pretty plugged-in gamer, but you're just not, like, really putting the time in to understand it, that's confusing, and nobody should be embarrassed by being confused by it.
Yeah, I'm about to try and
a mom or a grandma going into GameStop. If you're a mom or a grandma going to the GameStop, we have no fucking idea.
You are completely fucked. Yeah, if we can't work it out. Yeah, you can help me out in here, and maybe some of our listeners. The Series S, so that's the cheaper one. And that will play all of the games that the other one will play, but they just won't be in high resolution.
Yeah. It is less powerful, but it's less powerful under the idea that it can play all the same games, but they would only be like HD, there wouldn't be 4K.
They'll be like 1440.
And then they can scale. So if you hook it up to a 4K TV, it will upscale, but it's still like, you know, ultimately the finer detail is 1440. Yeah. And then the One X, and by the way, again, this is confusing. Like, it's kind of a weird move, but the One X is full 4K. So it actually has like a higher resolution and more power in some way. But the SSD and the memory and the RAM and everything of the One S is at a level where it can have the faster loading times and all the next gen features. It's just only the resolution doesn't max out as high. So it's like a give and a take.
So officially, the One X I think has more teraflops than the one.
Yes.
Than the Series S, but it sort of shows you that all of that doesn't necessarily mean as much as everyone was hoping for.
Right, and Stu Leck is a perfect example. So he has a 1080 TV still. So actually for him, even though I think he has the One X, he's not really benefiting from it that much. And then if he got the One S, for him, it actually would be a better option for his TV. Now, of course, if he gets a 4K TV in a year or two, then maybe he wouldn't want to, you know, even bother doing it just for a short term. But for his TV, the One S is a better system.
I'm up enough on the news that I know the difference, and so that's not a problem. For me, it's more a case of just looking back on them. And you know, when you just see all of their names lined up, it just looks bizarre. I mean, it was bad enough calling it the Xbox One, and then you had the original Xbox.
That was a stupid name in the first place, yeah.
And it's when you line them all up, like especially if they are actually doing or proper backwards compatibility. And then that makes it me really, really awkward to then actually try and figure out which one was which.
Yeah, I think the S is a good middle ground. I think the price they hit for that is really good. And if in 5 years time or 3 years time, you know, that Xbox are knocking it out of the park with exclusives of all these companies they bought, then yeah, that might be a good option for me. So I don't have to spend, you know, half a grand on a console, and I can still play those same games. And if I'm not that picky, I'm happy with 1080p majority of the time, and I probably wouldn't notice unless it's a real hard hitting game like The Last of Us. I want the absolute best that I can possibly get, but I'm not that pixel picky.
I sit far enough back from my TV that I generally don't notice.
Yeah, so I think that's really good that they've given those options. It's a bit odd that the PlayStation's options of disc drive or not. That's weird. I mean, I'm still. I'm going to get the disc drive one because I think that extra 90 quid, I'll save that. If I buy used games like 8 times, then that's it.
That's the other thing with the One S, isn't it? Obviously, that doesn't have a disc drive. So right. You can't play used games.
The S doesn't have one.
Yeah. And backwards compatibility as well. Obviously, old games you wouldn't be able to.
Big round circle on it. I thought that was to indicate that it could play discs.
No, I think
the Boombox.
I think that's supposed to be a fan, isn't it, or something? Or air vent.
It does have all the backwards compatibility, though. You said that, right?
It does, but you obviously can't play games by sticking the disc in.
The disc, right.
If you have the game on disc, you're going to have to buy it again in order to play it.
I'm not getting that one, then. Take it back. But yes, I'm getting the big, fat, weird one with a big, sort of pregnant disc drive PlayStation when I do get one. But like you say, Rob, you know, who knows, and by the time I get one, they might have the second version of it out, and it may not be the size of my entire entertainment center.
Yeah.
It when I get a PS4, I will definitely be getting the digital only version.
PS5.
Yes. Because I don't think I own any more, even a single Sony game on disc. It's all digital.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought to start with. I thought, I'm just getting to the point now where I can't be. I mean, in fact, so thinking about that, that's the reason I'm going more digital now. I never used to like paying, especially like £59 for a game. Fuck you. And we can get onto games prices later. But yeah, I lent my PS4 to my friend because I wasn't using it for about a month or two. He took my Spyro the Dragon disc out, and it's still at his house, and I haven't got it back. And every time I put my PlayStation on, I go, maybe I should just play a bit of Spyro, click on it and go, I haven't got the disc, fuck. And like that's just like nailed it in the coffin for me. Like I would have spent an extra £20 on the game to buy it, to get it, you know, if I was going to buy it digital at the time. But yeah, the convenience of just being able to re-download stuff and not have to run around trying to find discs, that's fine. But the way I play games at the moment, and how I generally play games, is I buy a game, I buy Last of Us 2, I play it to completion, I then put it on a shelf or I trade it in. And I think that's going to continue, providing all the games, I'm assuming there's going to be used games for the next generation, and they're going to all work. I don't know whether they're going to be putting more bullshit in, they're always trying to put in like extras and stuff for the original game so that the used versions aren't quite as worth as much because they've got codes that have been used and shit like that.
But stop doing
I'm that assuming it's all going to work same as this generation, right?
Yeah, but I think already this past generation there's so many people now that really are pretty much all digital and just don't even deal with the discs anymore, and I think this next generation it's only going to accelerate, especially since this is the first time that both systems have, right from day one, have a version that only has digital, you know?
Even the old argument of, like, the thing is, obviously, if the digital disappears, you've still got it the disc. That doesn't really work anymore.
No, exactly. No,
for instance, games like Spyro. Was it Spyro only had the first game on the disc?
Yeah, that's right.
The second two were yet to download.
And if you're one of these unfortunate people who has no real internet connection, which is not a lot of people anymore, but certainly they still exist, you know, the game you get on that disc is literally out of date on release day, because there's usually almost just huge patches on release day for some of these big complex games. And so if all you ever had was the disc, you probably just have a buggy pre-release version of the game in reality.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, it literally is the cost saving on buying used games and trading games in that makes sense to me. It's £90 is quite a lot when you initial outlay. If you're buying a console, an extra £100 is a lot of money. But over the course of having it for four or five years, or whatever, however long it's going to be, I make that money back in a very short amount of time. So I think that's
to me though. And this is just me. I know some people they really want to be able to have the used games, and you can share them. And people that are invested in that, I get it. I don't blame them. But you know, these days, if you just wait for digital sales, use your wish list, I mean, you can get games so cheap anyway. Like, I very rarely buy any of my games at full price.
I agree. No, you're right. You are right. So, yeah, it depends how you want to play. I mean, at the moment, as I say, I'm not playing games quickly enough to justify that. But I think, I don't know. Who knows? So that's that thing. So what do we think about the concept of games as a whole being a lot more expensive? People talking $70, like £70, and that's ridiculous. I mean, $70, I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's like what, £60? No, they're going to be £70 as well. That's,
oh, really? You guys are crazy. Getting fucked on the experience.
Yeah, we usually do.
Yeah. So that's insane.
I think the argument from just your average entitled gamer is like, oh, they shouldn't raise the prices of my games, and that's not a very deep thought, but I get why people feel it. I think from the gaming, from publishers and from developers, they're saying, like, you know, literally games haven't gone up in price in like 15 years, and inflation has gone up, and we're paying more and more people to make these more and more complex games, these big games. Like, of course they got to go up in price. At the same time though, you can also show that like there's more and more of an audience of these people buying these games across all these platforms, and so they should have economies of scale. That
distribution costs are lower if they're digital. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Also, so there's good reasons why the prices also don't always need to go up. But
generally, the publishers who tend to make that argument are also the ones who have just packed their games full of microtransactions.
Yes, yeah,
and there's never, and certainly all AAA games, there's never one version of that game that will get released. You'll have the normal version, and then the ultimate version, and then the whatever version.
I feel like I've had these conversations for a while there, but that's just because we haven't recorded. Games don't seem to be that complicated to me now. There's the base game, or there's like the special edition versions that have ridiculous names. Mm. I guess it depends on the type of game. If you're buying a Destiny-type game, that's...
Ubisoft is the worst about this. Yeah. And you guys know that I love Ubisoft and I love my Assassin's Creed, and I'll be getting it day one and I'll be fucking loving it. But they're the worst. I mean, every game that comes out now, they have the regular version, like a deluxe version, a gold version, a fucking all-in version. Like there's a version.
They usually have a spreadsheet that comes with it in order to tell you which one you should need to get.
There are versions of all Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Far Cry 6, and Watch Dogs Legion that day one is $120. It's bananas. And the thing is, they also do the microtransaction shit in the games, but they know like they're gonna make most of the money from the people that buy the game, and then they're gonna get some people that, you know, interact with that microtransactions. That's just a nice little dovetail income on those games.
It's not your game
like Rocket League. You're going the opposite direction because you're saying our whole ecosystem now is based around we're gonna make more and more money the more people that are playing it, because it's all about microtransactions. And so why would we make anybody pay for this to get in? We're gonna fleece them on all the microtransactions. So they went free to play today.
As far as I'm concerned, microtransactions should only be on free to play games. I mean, I kind of considered Rocket League as being free to play because I got it free on PS Plus anyway. But the only times I've ever spent any money on microtransactions, which has only been twice. And both of those have been on free-to-play games that I played for, like, fucking ages, and so I thought they deserved a bit of money.
I wish I could say that I've only spent that much. I have not spent a lot, and I'm not one of these guys that's, like, hiding it. Like, but on Rocket League over the years, I've probably spent a solid $50. That's over 3 years of playing it. So, I mean, overall, I'd say, hey, it's a good value. I've played a ton of that game, and I love it, but it still feels stupid when I think, oh, man, I've actually spent probably... It meant $40-$50 on fucking skins and shit, you know, what basically all it is. And then I've spent definitely some money on each of the last couple Assassin's Creed games and that stuff. Not a lot. Like I try to like be careful about what I'm spending, and if they have a sale on those fucking points and all that stuff, like I'll spend like $10 or $5. I probably put like $15 into Odyssey.
What were you getting?
They do get me, because if I'm spending another, if I know for sure, I look at it and I go, okay, I'm going to be playing this game at least another 30, 40 hours, and that fucking armor set looks amazing, and I want to run around and look like that, I guess I'm spending $5 on it, because I'm an idiot.
On a single-player game?
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. But, again, if I'm going to spend the next 30 hours of my time, do I like that they're doing that? No, I do not. And do I like that I'm actually somehow encouraging them to say that it's okay because I'm giving them money? No, I don't like that one bit. But if I'm going to spend another 40, 50 hours playing that game and I really want my dude or my chick to be wearing that armor, I'll spend $5 on it. There's the value for me.
You're not going to the pub very much anymore because of lockdowns and shit. You know, that's the price of a pint of beer, or less than the price of a pint of beer. Yeah, so you just say, hey, fuck it. I want that armor. I'm buying it.
I mean, you could also say... If games companies are doing so badly out of the fact that they've not increased the prices of games and they're all really poor, how exactly was Bethesda worth $7.5
billion? Well, I hear what you're saying. I don't think all these publishers are necessarily crying poverty, though. You know, like everybody knows that Skyrim and Elder Scrolls, you know, Grand Theft Auto has morphed into the whole Grand Theft Auto Online thing, so they've created a whole different level of wealth and even bigger than they ever were. But just in terms of a big single-player game, you could make an argument that in just like multi-platform huge releases, there's Grand Theft Auto as a single-player game. It's number one with a bullet, obviously. Call of Duty, even as a yearly release, is so huge. But you could argue that Skyrim is next on the list, and that the next Elder Scrolls could arguably be the third biggest just single player franchise in the world. You know, like
I always liked it with was it when EA said that they had to put microtransactions and loot boxes and stuff into games to make them like worth any money. I think it was Jim Sterling who said, if you can't make money out of a Star Wars game, then you should not be in the game-making business.
And then, ironically, they made a really good Star Wars game and didn't fill it with microtransactions. So, you know, yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, that game is still not dropped in their EA Access, or now it's EA Play. And what a bunch of horse shit. Like, there's a reason that people are paying for that, and that game's been out for over a year now. Come on. Jesus Christ.
Hmm. But yes, pricing, I was saying, yeah, £70 is a lot for a game, no matter how much, which way you cut it. So I think, yeah, they should have, if they increased it to 60, that'd be fine by me.
I mean, I already refused to pay 50. I'll wait until the drop in price.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I should say, Seth, the digital sales are crazy. Like, I've wanted to play Odyssey for a long time now, and I'll never get around to it. But it's only like, it's like £15 now in the sale. It's like, yeah, I could have spent 60 quid on it, and now it's 15 quid. So yeah, I'm not too concerned about the prices going up, even if I'm stuck with a digital only console. So I think, people will just have to adjust. If they can't afford it, just adjust the way you play games and don't buy them the day they come out. So yeah, that's one thing.
I mean, you said that that's not going to happen. People are still going to be buying the new FIFA and Madden, even though they're exactly the same as the previous year.
Yeah, apart from John Mouse, who's seen the light.
Well, we've actually worked through our whole news discussion list pretty organically. Hashtag organic discussion, guys. Nice work. I have one last question, unless you guys have more you want to say about the systems. What do you guys just think of the look of the two systems? Like literally just the aesthetics and the controller and the direction that Sony has gone with the kind of like very alien-esque weird looking system. And then just the very like monolithic box that is the Xbox. What do you guys think of all that?
I think the Xbox One looks pretty good, but it becomes awkward to fit it into my entertainment system. Because you kind of have to put it vertically, even if you put it horizontally, it doesn't fit.
Does it go on its side? Can it go on its side safely?
It can go on its side, I think.
It does go on its side. A lot of people don't know that. They haven't been good about communicating it. But like Robin says, it's still like pretty big profile, even on
its side. It'll still be taller, yeah. And I'm not even totally sure that the PS5 is massive. And I don't know if on its side that will fit in my unit either.
From a horizontal standpoint.
Yeah,
I mean,
because I think that even when it's on horizontal, it's supposed to have a little stupid stand underneath it, so that might make it a bit too big. And even if it does fit in, it'll be quite tight, and so then you're gonna have problems with ventilation and things.
What's the situation? Yeah, what's the situation with fans on both of them? Because I'm assuming the Xbox One, as it got fans coming out at the top, the air must come in through one side and out the other, right? So it's one side of the cube and out the top. And then the PlayStation, I'm assuming, is like the PlayStation 4 is. It's front to back or something like that.
Based on the size of it, I'd assume that there is quite a lot of ventilation in it.
Mm.
Presumably to avoid the issues they had last gen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other reason for me wanting to upgrade is my PlayStation 4 is starting to sound ridiculous. To the point where if I went playing downstairs after Camilla's gone to bed, I have to wear headphones because I can't turn the volume up on the TV to drown out the sound of the PlayStation loud enough. So yeah,
my PS4 Pro is actually pretty quiet. That's all right. My old PS4 was really loud.
I've had it. Well, when did launch from? So I've never cleaned it out either. So my own fault maybe. But if it's almost worth spending 400 quid just to have a nice quiet console. But
I do quite like the look of the new controller on PS5.
I think it's really sharp.
Even my wife's pointed out that it'll get dirty really quickly.
Depends if you wash your hands much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the look of both.
Well, you know Rob though, he's always outdoors. You know, he's got his sleeves rolled up, working in the garden. I mean, you know,
yeah, that's my proper outdoorsman, mate.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems a bit disappointing that the Xbox One looks exactly the same. I assume that's part of that is so that things like the Elite controller still works.
Especially that's a nice thing that all their controllers are still compatible, but I do love that it's now a USB-C. That's a huge difference to be able to like, not have that fucking thing out, dropping out all the time.
Yeah, that's really good. And I like that blue one they've announced as well. I like the look of that blue one.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Xbox, because even though I agree their controller looks so samey, in a way you can argue it's a matter of, you know, fair amount of consensus is that the Xbox has pretty much nailed the controller. It's an amazing controller. So this new one just has minor updates, and it does look very samey, but they always put out all those special editions all the time, and they have that design lab, which a lot, you know, more people than you would think do end up buying at least one custom controller where you can choose all your colors and different things, and I've done that.
I think, haven't they said that the PS5 controller is going to be 70 quid as well?
Oh, I think that's, well, I don't know about quid, but I think dollars, yeah, I think it's $69.99.
Well, if it's $70, it'll probably be 70 quid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a bit harsh. I mean, I do have two PS4 controllers. Actually, I've got more than that, but I generally only use one.
Because you've only got one set of hands.
Well, yeah, I generally don't play with anyone else.
I see, yeah. That's true.
Especially in the current climate.
Yeah.
But even then, it used to be... I don't know if the Pro controller has better battery or if it's just that I'm not playing it as long. But I used to be that I'd have two controllers on a cradle thing next to me, and then when one died, I'd use the next one. But I don't feel like I'm about to do that.
I just plug my controller in when I finish using it, and then it's always ready to go. But yeah, I've never had a problem with my battery.
Well, I've played games for quite long times.
Yeah, I don't. I play for 2 hours a week, so it's probably fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rob, you probably go through like 3 or 4 cycles of that in one sitting. But I have a battery in my Xbox controller, and you know, in the Xbox you can swap them out, so I could buy a new battery. But mine is terrible battery life. I mean, I just don't bother because I always have the plug-in right next to me. So even while I'm playing, I can just quick plug it in and keep going. It's fine.
I'm curious to see what the battery's life is like in this new PS5 controller. Obviously, it's going to... It looks like the lights have cut all of the lights out as much, but it is going to have more of that HD rumble stuff. Although the Nintendo one's got that on the Pro controller, and that seems to last forever.
I always switch all that shit off. No, I hate rumble. I mean, I'm curious to find out what the rumble is like on the PS5 and whether, because it seems like they're integrating it to the point where you kind of almost have to use it. And I've never liked it, but
it'll get used in the first bunch of games to show it how it works, and then they'll stop bothering.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, it'll be there, but
like the touch screen on the Vita and all that kind of stuff, and the back pads that no one ever bothered.
It's the future, man. It's the future. The vibrations. I don't know. I'm just interested to see how that goes. But yeah, I like the new controller. It looks really nice. Looking forward to just holding that and using it. Well, whatever, man. I mean, I showed Camilla how big the thing was compared to the... I saw there was a diagram showing next to the PS4. And yeah, my penis, it turns out, is bigger than a PS4.
The slim one.
On its end. Yeah. So anyway, consoles, they're great, and we're all excited, and we're going to get new ones at some point in the next few years. That all happened. I mean, that's basically everything that's happened since we last recorded, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Most of that came about over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of exciting Nintendo stuff for me, but it's all just been announcements of games and... You know, the Mario 3D Collection All-Stars thing came out, which is nice.
Fuck with that? Fucking Nintendo. Jesus Christ.
I know. It is a cash grab, and they should have spent more money on sorting it out, but it's fine.
How much would it cost them to update Mario Sunshine into like a higher resolution and make it...
I mean,
give it
I don't have a problem. I've played all three. I haven't played the first one, the N64 one, because it's shit. But the other two, I mean, Galaxy I've played a lot this week, and it's great. It didn't need anything doing to it. It's good as it is.
Is there any reason why they couldn't add Galaxy 2 on there as well?
Well, they just want to... I mean, people will pay 40 quid for that.
Also, is it that this is only available until March as well?
Yeah, that's dumb. Idiots. Yeah. But if they'd sorted out Mario 64, I would have been really keen to play that game without it looking really dog ugly and playing like an absolute camera mental weird thing.
Have you got this?
Yes, I have got it, yeah.
Have they fixed the controls then to work with two sticks?
No. Oh, no, I don't think they have. I mean, I haven't played that in Mario 64 because I'd read that they've done nothing to it and the camera is still as it was originally.
That's ridiculous. And that would be the main appeal.
Exactly. So if they'd done that, then I'd have been happy with this collection. I don't think they needed to do much to Sunshine and Galaxy. They're both really good games as they are, and they still play and still stand up, I think. I mean, a lot of people don't like Sunshine. I used to like it, and I've started playing it from the start, done the first couple of levels and gone, yeah, this is good. I like this game. It's probably got some annoying bits in it later on, but...
Yeah, I never understood the dislike of Sunshine. I didn't play it extensively, but I played probably a couple of hours of it, and I was like, this is good.
I assume a lot of that's down to the fact that not that many people played it because not that many people bought the GameCube.
Yeah, and it's also it was a bit weird. There was bits in it that were annoying. I used to really like... I mean, we're talking about what we've been playing a bit now, I guess, but there's the bits in that that are the sort of puzzle...
Who wants to play video games?
Yeah, that bit. The sort of mental platforming sections where you sort of go off and there's like, oh, you're floating in these like random areas doing crazy platforming, really difficult. That was always really good. So there's some great stuff in that game. It is a weird ass game and there's some frustrating bits, but yeah, it's cool. And yes, I'm a bit pissed at Nintendo for just shitting these out. Is, you know, considering what they did for Mario All-Stars back in the day for those other games, they've just put so much effort and care and attention to making better versions of them and making them look better and stand up for that era. They could have just made, even just put some nicer textures and controls on Mario 64. That would have been really nice. But you can't argue even with painful price for this. I would have paid that amount just to play Galaxy because it is just such a fucking brilliant game. And to get Sunshine and 64, not that I'll ever touch it, in there as well is great. So yeah, I'm pretty pleased with that. And I think given from the sales, it's something like the third best selling game of the year or something, then they're going to be doing more stuff like this. You know, we're going to be getting Zelda wins. They're going to be getting, they're just going to be shitting stuff out the door of re-releases of their old games as they have been continuing to do since the Switch launch. So, and I will keep buying it because I'm a twat and, it's nice to be able to play these games again.
Hey, just think if these old games that they didn't do anything to at all to actually even change them for the current system, if they would be a persistent purchase that you could count on having in perpetuity in future systems. Just think
of
that.
Absolutely. Wow, that'd be amazing. I know.
What a novel idea.
I cancelled my online subscription for Switch a long time ago. I only ever had it for a couple of months. And I've just like, I don't need all this. It's just all I would use it for is to play like the Super Nintendo games and whatever, and I can play all those many other places.
The only thing that caused an issue with more recently was I never play any online games on the Nintendo, so it seemed pointless. But I played a bit of Dark Souls, and obviously there was no online play in that. And my wife's playing Animal Crossing, and so she doesn't get the online stuff in that either. But it just seems like weird to charge you for what little you're really getting for online on Nintendo.
Yeah, it's
yeah. Jesus. Anybody who's listened to the show over the years, you know, when Seth pops on here once a year or whatever it is, you know, just like what if Nintendo announced tomorrow, hey, now it's all persistent purchases. You'll always own your games going forward, and if you want to buy like a bunch of old Nintendo 8-bit games or 16-bit games or Mario Sunshine or some Zelda or any of these games, like they're yours. You'll get to keep them, like Wii U games, dude. Like, well, maybe I'd wait till like the exact system if there is going to be a new Switch, but like literally tomorrow I would just buy a Switch and I would probably spend like $200 in day one on digital purchases. Like think of how many people would do that if they knew like, oh,
they would do that.
I mean, They're not making more money doing it this way. Like they're actually keeping people out of their ecosystem that kind of know why they would buy things or wouldn't buy things.
I mean, it's understandable for things where they may not have the license or things have changed over the years. Like
right.
Any sort of Nintendo's own properties, they should be just giving that shit and selling it. Just sell it.
And with the vast majority of Nintendo games, those are the only games that anyone's interested in.
Yeah.
A lot of them, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so... Well, yeah, games that we have been playing. Who wants to play video games? We're talking about Switch, so I would just I've not listed all the games that I've been playing on my Switch on my thing here, just because it's a lot. But I've not been playing them for long periods of time, particularly. So I'm just going to reel off some of the things that I have been playing. I have been playing the Mario 3D games we just talked about. I've been playing quite a lot of Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom, which is like the new version of Monster Boy, like Wonder Boy, sorry. That's really good. That's sort of Metroidvania type thing, properly polished. If you ever played Wonder Boy 3 and the Dragon's Trap, it's very similar to that. And it's, and you should do, because the remake of that's amazing. They've just, the original game is exactly the same, just they've changed the graphics. So that's really good. I've got Ori and the Will of the Wisps to play, but I've not played that yet. I'm quite excited for that. And the same with Dragon Quest XI. That once I've got another 100 hours to play a JRPG, I'll be playing that. Played through Streets of Rage 4 a couple of times. I've been playing Final Fantasy 9 for about 6 or 7 hours worth of that. And I've just stopped. I've been playing a lot of Trine 4, which is really good. Just lots of little things. Some more Ni No Kuni. I've played another few hours of that. Some Crash Team Racing.
Chris, I feel like I just went in a time machine to a year ago, and like you're just playing the exact same things you were playing a year ago, basically.
Exactly that, but yeah, they're all portable. Yeah.
Ni No Kuni. Hello, 2018. Great, I'm glad. Chris,
exactly, they want their game back. 2013 actually was Ni No Kuni, the first one, I think. But yeah, Witcher 3. I've not really played much of that. And Metro Last Light. I said I've been playing. So that's pretty much all I've been playing on the Switch, dabbling in things, really. I've been actually playing a lot of 3DS as well, a hell of a lot of 3DS, because I've got basically all the games on that, because it's like it's not an official version of it anymore. So it's got basically all the games that were ever released on the DS and the 3DS on it.
We can't play that online, can we? You only can play that if you're like in the same room with somebody. You're like, or can we play that online?
You can play them online, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how. I've
got a 3DS. We can play
for all of their big online DS games.
I don't put my 3DS online. I'm not just saying.
Just in case anyone's looking.
Wink, wink, tip in the nose. Gotcha. Okay.
My 3DS. Nintendo might not like what I've done to it. But anyway, yes, we could probably play 3DS online. I could spoof them or something. So yeah. Anyway, I've rambled about Switch. So Rob, what games have you been playing?
Well, going back to games that we've been playing for ages, I've been working my way through the Yakuza series.
Like, what, again?
Okay, once again, what year is this? Rob's been playing Yakuza games every time I've ever been on the show.
I played the first Yakuza game I played was Yakuza 3 on the PS3. Mm-hmm. The previous two games had been out on the PS2, and I didn't know about them at that point. And I'd sort of stayed away from them for a lot, and then I started playing both of the Koami ones. I'm not totally sure where I got them from. I must have either bought them in a sale or they came on PS Plus at some point. I ended up playing through those. Although before that, the thing that actually got me thinking about playing it again was I played the Fist of the North Star Paradise Lost game, which is made by the Yakuza team, so it basically is a Yakuza game. Although, having said that, all three of them had a bit of an issue, less so on Yakuza 2, where they, I don't know if it's just the old style way of doing it, but then again, Fist of the North Star is new. They do make you run around the houses a lot. It's not even fetch quests. So you get a thing where you'll go into a building and get a mission, and the mission is, oh, you go over to this other place and talk to this person. And then you go to talk to that person, and they say, oh, no, I don't have it. Go and talk to this person, who is the original person you talked to. And you're just sort of going back and forth.
Then he just goes, oh, I forgot, I did have it.
I can't stand shit. That's why I didn't like open world games.
And you're not progressing. And in Fist of the North Star, it was particularly annoying, because it was always seemed like the place you had to go back to was up a flight of stairs that he runs up slightly slower than normal, and it just was massively irritating. And it was
nothing like padding out content with that kind of shit.
Yeah, the first Yakuza game did that quite a lot as well. I mean, I don't remember the old ones doing that, or the PS3 ones that I played. So or maybe it did, and I just didn't realize. But the worst one I'd say was Fist of the North Star. There was one in particular where, I was just going back and forth. And then by the end of it, pretty much none of the stuff that I'd done meant anything. There was no point to any of it. And you just thought, you just wasted my time. So that was the kind of the first time with those kind of games where I felt like that. But for the most part, they're all fun. They're random side missions and serious main stories. So yeah, I enjoyed them. Although it is weird knowing that they're going to be, the new game is going to be
a tactics game or something, right?
Turn-based, combat, which seems bizarre. Seth?
What have you been doing, Seth?
Apropos of what we were talking about, a lot of the games I play these days are from Game Pass. And I kind of, to what you were earlier saying, Chris, I do think, like, if you get Game Pass and you just kind of figure, okay, this is how much it's costing me a year. And then you think, okay, if I play even one or two bigger releases in a year, which I do, I definitely take advantage of it to that degree. It's already paid for itself. You know, like, it's, you're saving money just even playing one or two big games and then some of the other little games. So I don't ever feel it's an intentional thing where I'm not always looking at Game Pass being like, oh shit, I got all these games, I got to catch up on them. Oh, I got to try that one, I got to try that one. I'm just like, you know what? This service has already paid for itself, and I've got it for like 3 years because I took advantage of that deal, you know, when it was kind of that upgrade deal they had for a while there. So I don't let it stress me out, but I do just kind of peruse it, or I'll check the app and I'll see like, oh, look at that little game. And you do, it is really nice. And it's kind of a common story in the industry now, or you'll see people on Twitter like, oh, I just tried this little indie game in Game Pass and I love it. Like, I never would have discovered it otherwise. And it has, in a way, become their new Xbox Live Arcade. There's a lot of little gems in there that I wouldn't necessarily have picked out of just, like you said, just the mind-numbing thing where you can't keep, you know, it's just saturated, you can't keep track of all the games. And a little one is called Neon Abyss. It's this tiny little kind of roguelite game. It's a 2D kind of Metroid-y Contra type, you know, shooter. It's super good. Like, it's really, really, really good. And you just kind of go through these randomized runs, and you're just getting more and more powerful on each run. And then of course it has the element that you get enough points or things that you can kind of go back and upgrade yourself a little bit. You upgrade certain abilities and things in the levels that changes how it keeps progressing. And then if you make it through all the way through one of the big bosses, well, then you've gotten to the next plateau. So even when you go back to the beginning at this, the conceit of it is that, like, you're in this bar in the underworld. And then, like, there's like these demons or gods or something that have taken over. And so you go back to this bar, like, where you're dead, and like you have these different heroes, and you just keep playing through trying to defeat these gods and escape or something. I don't know. The story doesn't matter, but
it looks good. I'm just looking at the video now. It looks like my sort of thing.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like, it surprised me how much I liked it. And I've probably played it again because of the nature of the game. I can just do one run or a couple runs. And some nights I do play it a little more. Sometimes I don't play it for a week. One night I just play one run, and I've probably put 30 hours in that game, and I've really truly enjoyed every bit of it.
It's reminded me of Rogue Legacy in its structure and
the way it moves. I think Rogue Legacy was the game that for both me and Chris got us into roguelikes.
Yeah,
because I've not played that many, but I
really do like them when I get the find one that clicks.
And I didn't think I'd like that sort of genre at all. But the few that I've played,
I think you have to be able to make progress. If you get sent back to the start and you're not making any progress, I get pissed very, very quickly. So as long as you're building up XP or whatever and getting better each time you play it, then you feel like you're getting somewhere. Yeah.
And for me, and of course, this is true with any of these games, but I think different people have different tolerances for how frustrated they get or don't get in these kind of games. And like a game like Dead Cells, which is super highly rated and super popular, I did get really frustrated. I didn't like going through that thing over and over again.
It was good, but it had the problem where you're not necessarily progressing, because the things that you get are basically random weapons that you might get at the start of the next one. And in some cases, yeah, it was bad for you to get a weapon, because all that did was mean it would make it less likely that you get the weapon that you wanted. So there was a little bit. I got to the final boss quite a few times in Dead Cells, but I never actually managed to kill him.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I got sick of it after a while.
In Neon Abyss, there's a tangible feeling of progress, and this is probably true in Dead Cells and those other games too, but you also feel like you learn what the different weapons and upgrades are that are just the randomized ones you get, and then you know which ones to take and which ones not to take, and how they're benefiting you, and how it even changes your playstyle a little bit on that run. I have a good time with it.
Things like Rogue Legacy, and then, I mean, it was a space shooter, but it was still roguelike, was Everspace. Both of them, you're kind of leveling your characters up as you go, so even once you've finished, you can still level up, so that you're more powerful the next time you do it. I kind of like that.
And this game, it originally came to Steam, and then it came to, I don't remember if it came to Switch first or not, but now it's on PS4 and Xbox. It went into Game Pass, but they are still updating this game, like, pretty meaningfully. And Chris, it's on Switch, and I think you would like it a lot.
It is on Switch. Okay. Well, I'll buy it now. See how much it is. I'll go now and see how much it is.
I bet it's $15 tops.
There's all these games that I'm starting to lose track of the names as well, because they just all start to sound the same after a while.
Yeah, I mean, there was another roguelike top-down 2D
Neon something.
Yeah. I remember liking that quite a lot.
Yeah, that was all right. I played that with Pilch for a bit, I think.
I think we played it together.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. And then we stopped because she kept killing me or something.
I suck at these things.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's £15.99 on the Switch.
Hey, there you go.
There's a demo available. I'll get the demo, and that will remind me to buy it if I really like it. There we go. Thank you, Seth. That's nice to have another game to have to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's
supposed to talk next? What's going on?
Yeah, I was just going to say about I've been playing The Last of Us 2 a lot of it. I think I'm nearly at the end, probably. I can't remember how many hours I've done, but it's a lot. I played a lot of it to start with, and I've gradually played less, but I've been playing it, you know, maybe at least once a week, and gradually working my way through it. Yeah, it's like the last one, isn't it? the second to Last of Us. It's basically the same as the last one, but better. And just doing the same thing. So, you know, it's very much just, it's all about the story. I'm not gonna spoil it here. But yeah, you're playing as Ellie for a lot of it. And there's some really good moments. There's a lot of doing the same stuff. You know, it's a very long game, and I can't remember how many hours it is totally, but God knows. Is it like 20 hours, Rob? 25 hours?
So it's supposed to be like 30, 40, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
It's like 30 maybe. So I'm over 20 hours at this point, I think. And I'm not in any sense of getting bored of it. I'm really, really enjoying it. And they mix it up so much more than they did the first game, even. There's a lot more to do in it, to keep it interesting. The story's so well done. It jumps around quite a bit to keep it interesting as well. And you don't always play as the same character. And that makes it more interesting. And the first one, obviously the ending of that was a bit, some people liked it, some people didn't, but that plays into this as well. And the sorts of themes that you're dealing with there, you're dealing with in this. And obviously, you know, people have said how good it looks. It does look really, really good. Everything, you can't really complain about. The only complaints I would have is I feel there's kind of some flashback scenes, which I won't go into detail on what they are, but you do sort of go back in time and see some things before what's happened. And those scenes, for some reason, like the characters in those, I don't think they've had quite as much polish. Like there was Joel in a couple of those, in two separate of instances of that, and you know he's running along like it's, you know, because there's always two of you, or it's quite often there's two of you. You've got a companion who's helping you out throughout the game. It's not continuously, but off and on. And they are, I mean, just on the whole, they are much, much better than any other game I've worked in. You never get pissed off with them. Sometimes they're killing other bad guys, sometimes they're not. But they're never really getting in your way, and that they're not sort of breaking the illusion quite as much as the first game did, which is when they're running around in front of all these clickers and it's like, can you not see it?
I feel like there's been a few games in the last couple of years that have really finally nailed that a little differently, like where it's like, oh man, companion characters, maybe the industry has cracked that, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot better. I mean, it still happens. But what I was going to say was that those sort of flashback scenes, like two or three times, like the character models weren't quite as good quality, and I would be like Joel sort of clipping, his legs were like clipping into the floor and like he's up to his knees, whereas, you know, for whatever reason is and then all of a sudden he judder and flicker back up onto the ground, which is, you know, it's, I feel like I'm picking, but because the rest of the game is so well polished and absolutely every detail seems to have been taken into account, when something like that happens it's that much more jarring. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's just a bloody amazing game. I mean, they've got a lot more crafting. There's a lot more sort of upgrade paths that you gradually pick up as you go along. And I don't know how that works, because sometimes the upgrade paths, you have to find like manuals that are hidden in the environments to be able to get these new upgrade paths. And mostly they're not that well hidden, but you certainly could not see them. And miss them. Like I found one inside a boat once, and I was like, if I hadn't gone inside this boat, I wouldn't have found this, and then I wouldn't have been able to do X, Y, and Z with my character. But there's, so the environments are amazing. I love Seattle. The fact that it's set in Seattle, I love Seattle as a place, and I've been there two or three times myself. So it's really interesting.
Pacific Northwest.
I mean,
did you play Infamous Second Son?
No.
That sounds like Seattle as well, isn't it? It is.
So yeah, I surely should do. And in fact, Days Gone, the one thing that I wanted to play Days Gone for was just the setting, because I just love that place. Yep. That's Pacific North. Is that like Oregon as well? I can't remember. Yep. Something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's lovely. And then you're obviously the environments. They mix them up as much as you possibly can in a game like this. You know, you're going into all the, you know, into buildings and various buildings, and it's just clever. There's a lot more depth to all of it, and they've added sort of little extra puzzles where you can unlock chests and like what's sort of hidden upgrades and things like that, so you just solve certain things to get that, and then nothing's too complicated, but it just adds another depth to it. The weapons, you can upgrade the weapons again. I feel it's a little bit, there's not that much choice to the upgrades. It's like, oh, add stability to this, that, to the, you can add things to the weapons, but there's never really any sort of meaningful upgrades, I don't feel. You know, there's a couple of, you can zoom in and stuff like that with get a magnifier or whatever, but majority of the upgrades don't really feel like they're having that much of an effect. But yeah, I mean, it is sharp. It is fun. It is heart wrenching in places. You know, they're really good. Still the best at telling stories and getting you invested in characters, and also making you think about situations and from different points of view as well, which is one of the things they go for in this, which I've not seen done in the game quite as well. When you start to think about people's motivations and their actions and why people are like what they're like, given the world they're living in and what's happened to them. There's a lot to think about, and it's nice to be playing a game again that starts to make you think. And there's a lot of hidden sort of extra information around that you can pick up. There's letters all over the place, and if you want to take the time to read all this stuff, you can really start to sort of build your own stories about some of the people that they're meeting and how, you know, why those characters are like what they're like. So, yeah, really enjoying it. We'll continue to play it and finish it, and no doubt the rest of it's going to be is amazing. Playing guitars in games, didn't know it could be good and fun, and other cool stuff that you find later. I mean, there's so much cool stuff. I don't want to spoil any of it, because it's one of those games that you find it and you're like, oh, that's so awesome. There's such cool stuff. So I'll leave it be, and people have probably talked about it on the podcast. I've not really listened to many podcasts recently, and I'm sure this game has been talked about to death by other people. But yeah, it is smooth, it is fun, it's exciting, and it's polished, and it's really enjoyable. So Rob, you should just play it when you've got Yakuza 8 or whatever you're on. So yeah, get into it. Any questions, anybody, or is that enough on The Last of Us 2 for everybody?
When are they coming out with Yakuza Pacific Northwest?
There's a few different ones.
I had to call this company in Vancouver or outside of Vancouver just a couple days ago for like a product thing for work. And yeah, I got my question answered in about 30 seconds. It was a very easy question to get answered. Then I ended up talking to this lady for like 8 or 9 minutes just about Vancouver. And I was like so jealous that they get to live there. And I wish I could move there.
Yeah.
Oh man, so great.
Well, that's if all these forests don't burn down, at which point I was hoping to take my daughter to visit America, but it might have burned to the ground by the time I get there.
Yeah, it's a big fire. I think the skies and the smoke and everything around Vancouver was bad for a little bit there, but I don't think Vancouver wasn't burning. There was nowhere near, like, super near there.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Good to know. So, yeah, talking of Days Gone, Rob, you have also been playing that. I guess that's a good segue, right?
Well, it was about 20 minutes ago, yeah. Have either of you two played Days Gone?
I have not. I would like to. I mean, I'm currently playing a better zombie game set in the Pacific Northwest, so I guess I'll play that when I run out of this one.
Did you like it, Seth?
I liked it. And I enjoyed the time I spent with it. And then I definitely reached a time where I felt like it was extremely samey and it wasn't progressing. I felt like I was just doing the same kind of little fetchy things over and over. And then I just said, okay, I'm good. I don't think I'll ever play it again. But I did enjoy like a solid 8 to 10 hours of it. And I would say I did enjoy it.
Because I thought of it, because I was aware of the kind of game it was and what it's going to be like. And I often have those kind of criticisms of like the Assassin's Creed games and all that kind of stuff, but for a large part of this, it felt like there was more story in more of the missions, or it certainly felt that way to me. There was quite a lot of story to it. Story goes a little bit off the rails towards the like sort of the final act, but for the most part it was pretty good, and it kept me interested in it, whereas a lot of the times for things like Assassin's Creed, where you're repeating similar kind of things, I sort of lost interest. I think it helped when you're getting the missions as well. It wasn't specifying exactly what kind of mission it was. So for the most part, actually, yeah, I really quite enjoyed it. It kept my interest throughout, and I was certainly into playing it. I quite like leveling up your character and sorting out, like leveling up your bike and all that kind of thing.
The bike thing I didn't care for. The bike thing I didn't care for, because I mean I like that it has the bike. It's fine. It's just like having a horse in an open world game. It's fine. But they emphasize the bike so much of like all these upgrades and these things, and like you're running out of gas and you got to fix it and whatever. And after a while, I was like, okay, I'm totally over that particular gameplay mechanic. No pun intended.
The main problem that has is, like, I've seen it in a few other games as well, where it's only once you've upgraded it to a certain point that it feels more fun. So it felt like they'd developed a system that was fun and then had removed stuff from it,
right,
so that you could get up to that point. So like, yeah, by the end, things like getting gas or petrol isn't a problem anymore, and it controls much better and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of think, it probably would have been better if it was like that from the beginning. But then you do, it's still appealing, sort of leveling it up as you go along as well. So, yeah, it wasn't too bad. So, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. No, I thought it was pretty good. It's funny because I actually like Sam Witwer, the character, or the actor, in other things. I like Being Human. He was in Battlestar Galactica a little bit. But I thought his performance in that game was kind of annoying. I thought he just kind of like made himself sound kind of, like he was just like leaning into it a little too much.
They were doing
a little annoying.
I think they play on the idea of like him putting on a bit of an act to sort of protect himself. They do a similar thing with Joel in Last of Us, and so like in a similar way to the bike, he becomes a better character the more that you go on in the game. So it's one of those ones where it kind of requires you to play a fair amount before it starts to come into its own more. But yeah, I at the time I had nothing else to do, so I played it quite a lot.
Seth was talking about that was menial and got frustrating. Could you avoid that and just mainline it and still?
You can do the main missions, although I don't think it necessarily highlights which ones are the main missions, which is one of the things I do prefer, sort of like the way GTA does it as well, where it'll tell you who's giving you the mission, but it doesn't necessarily tell you that this is the main thing that's going to progress the story.
That's true. Although I would say it felt like even those side missions, even though they might not very specifically be moving along the main storyline, you kind of have to do them. They're sort of like...
A lot of them have sort of... reveal more about the characters. They have like a menu that tells you different kinds of stories that and like the percentage you got through it, and doing one mission might increase the percentage in multiple stories. So
exactly,
like your mate who's going along with you, so you'll learn a bit more about that, but you'll also learn something about the main mission.
But it also ties into like your relationship with those different little outposts and groups and stuff. And it didn't feel like a lot of them were really skippable in the same way they would be with like just a regular side quest in some games.
I mean, I don't skip that kind of stuff anyway. So
yeah, I don't either.
Probably doesn't affect me. But I think it might be a bit more difficult to try and just mainline it.
My thing with the menial stuff wasn't so much those kind of missions, which didn't bother me. It was more like the little nitpicky stuff you have to do, like the bike. And so and I get it's a game, like it doesn't have to be like, it's not a simulation at any level, but you know, if you really were thinking about, okay, how long can I ride this motorcycle before it runs out of gas? It's like 10 minutes, you know, like you're if you just rode it straight all the time, like your motorcycle's going to run out of gas every 10 fucking minutes. Well, it's too much. Like it's
that's kind of ridiculous. And yeah, towards the end, like I say, that's not an issue, but quite early on, I wasn't too worried. I mean, it can be quite fun to just drive it around, but I quite quickly just started fast traveling and going to places where, like the bases where I knew that there would be a gas can.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, yeah, then you get away from that, all that kind of stuff. So I don't think I was never in a position where I ran out of gas.
Oh, I fucking did. Maybe I was playing it wrong.
But I'm always very careful about that kind of stuff anyway.
And I will say, like, I think, and they intended it this way, it does, when you run out of gas, you're like, oh, if you're kind of near one of those little places where you're like, okay, I can get some gas over at the gas station, it does then have that emergent kind of gameplay where, like, okay, now, oh, fuck, there's some zombies over there and I got to sneak around and get that gas can, or do I want to get in a big fight? I mean, so it does have some of that in a way that it can be fun, but
so what you're saying, again, is Deadly Premonition nailed it in the first place.
I never ran out of gas in I never ran out of gas in Deadly Premonition either. It's one of those things where if I know it's possible, I will make sure that never happens. The other one that it was like that was Assassin's Creed Revelations or whatever it was called? The one set in, was it Turkey, I think?
Yeah, Constantinople,
Where they had, it gave you a side mission or a mini game where you had to do this crappy
tower defense
kind of thing. Yeah, it was terrible. And basically you would only ever have to do that if you fucked up some of the stuff, so I just made sure I never fucked up any other stuff, so I only ever did that once.
Oh, I had to do it twice. Yeah, it was terrible. That was a really good game, very underrated game. That was a terrible part of it.
So yeah, that what else have you been playing, Seth?
Another one also in Game Pass. This one a little different, though. It's not like I just discovered it because of Game Pass. So when I was at E3 back in 2015, that was when there was a lot of Oculus stuff going on, like the original Oculus stuff. And there's a game actually coming out soon, I think, on PS4 and Xbox One that was announced, that's actually kind of like a port to consoles and like an upgraded port of that old Oculus game from these guys that used to work. Man, I'm really talking all around this weirdly, but they're like Gunfire Games. Like people kind of know who they are now. They made the Battle Chasers RPG, which was from that same guy who's the artist, and they made I think they made the new Darksiders, the kind of top-down one. You know what I'm talking about? Yep. I think I'm getting that right. There's two different studios that came out of that. I might be conflating the two. There's Gunfire and there's Airship Syndicate. And then also those guys that I worked with who now have gone on to different jobs. But they were from the old Darksider teams at Vigil. But I remember that was going on. And then right around that time, it may have even been the next year, I don't know. But it was one of those early Oculus games. And it was this Super Lucky's Tale. And I like
Oculus game.
Originally it was, yes. And I think it was Oculus exclusively, but maybe it did come to other VR platforms. I don't recall. I didn't play it on VR, but eventually it did. They did port it to console, but they just ported it and it was not good. It came into Game Pass and I was very disappointed because I like little cutesy platformer games. And I actually, that character had a good look to it. Whenever I would see videos, I'm like, oh, I like this world. I think they've kind of nailed like the type of nostalgic cutesy thing that I like in character platformers. You know, mascot platformers. And then I played it and they had only ported the VR in such a way that the camera was, you only could kind of tilt it one direction a little bit, but it wasn't really a free camera and the graphics didn't really translate very well. It was like a rushed bad version of it. So I only played a little bit of it. And I said, okay, well, unfortunate miss on that. I thought I was going to like Super Lucky's Tale, didn't like it. Well, apparently last year, they came out with a completely, totally revamped version where it is a port, but they really kind of from the ground up fixed all the graphics, made it very, very in line with other like, you know, Mario's and Banjo-Kazooie, I guess, or Yooka-Laylee and all that kind of stuff. You know, like it's the same style. It's very polished. All the sounds and the music are really good. The character's really good. And now it's got a full 3D camera. And you're like, how is this the same game? Wow. Because now it's called New Super Lucky's Tale, and it came out on Switch last year, I think.
I was gonna say, that's the same version that's come to Switch.
Yeah, and I know it did get good reviews, and I remember thinking like, oh, well, if that comes to Xbox, I'll check it out again. Well, it dropped in Game Pass, and I have been playing that more than anything else recently, and I have just been grinning ear to ear the entire time. Like, it is my favorite little mascot platformer in years and years. It is super polished, super good. It just hits all the right touchy feelies, you know. It's just like, it's cute and it's fun. It's not annoying. It doesn't have any kind of weird, the writing is actually very good. There's no like, you know, I don't know. There's something about some of those little character platformers. Sometimes like they just, I don't know what it is exactly, but there's something about if you're making a game that is ostensibly in a way kind of for kids, but also playable by adults. And if you're making something cutesy, do you throw in the kind of jokes that are kind of like Looney Tunes back in the day? Of course, that was a different era. Or do you throw in the kind of jokes that kind of hit for adults, but they can play with their kids? And then sometimes they get a little weird. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but some of those games, like, just they don't hit the right note. This one does. And I'm like literally physically smiling when I'm playing it sometimes. It really is like exactly what I wanted out of these kind of games.
I think that's what I'm like with the Spyro games, the remaster of Spyro. I mean, even though I've played them before, the whole time I was just like, this is what I want. This is exactly what I want. And it hits everything that you need from that. It's really nice to have when you find it.
Yeah. I did buy the Spyro thing, and I started playing it and I have enjoyed it a little bit. I don't know if I'll get through all the games. I started playing the first one. I'm like, well, maybe I should just jump right to the second or third one and see how that was. I don't know.
The second one is my favorite, but yeah, I think they're all good, but it's really difficult to know how much nostalgia is playing into it, because I loved them back in the day and I love them now. So it's, you know, I can't sort of disconnect that at all. But.
You know, I also, well, it's a huge contrast for me, like Ratchet and Clank, which I do like Ratchet and Clank games, but they're not really, they are like half platformer, but they're really like, they're little action shooter games. And, you know, it's always the nuts and bolts just like popping everywhere all the time. Like, I think there's some meaningful updates they could make to that. I'd be interested to see what this next one's like. But Super Lucky's Tale, I mean, it is directly cribbing. I mean, there's, you know, it's unapologetically cribbing from Mario and from, you know, Banjo-Kazooie and those types of games.
Yeah.
Even down to like some of the sound effects almost seemed like they're just like homages to Super Mario Brother sound effects in some ways. But it never feels like cheap or a ripoff. Like, it's just, really well done. I don't know what else to say. I mean, the platforming is good. There's good puzzles. There's like these big, when you go into a new hub, it's kind of like, okay, you got a big hub and the hub itself is like a level. And then you have little individual levels you can go to in there, and you got to kind of clear through all the levels, and then you fight a big boss, and then you go to the next big world. And then it is also, again, it's a level, there's hidden things in it. There's little puzzles within there, and you're getting all these tickets and pages to this book and stuff. And then you go into these different levels, and again, you move on, and each one of them is just kind of unique and fun. And it's a very different little vibe. There's one that's like an island vibe. There's one that's kind of like a farm Western vibe. There's one, you know, all those little just archetypes. And yeah, the writing is good. The characters are good. The bosses are good. The little side characters are good. And Super Little Lucky is just cute, good platformer character. Anyway, that's it. But if you like those kind of games, I could not see that this would not scratch that itch, because it's just right down the middle, like fastball. Like this is exactly what you would want from those kind of things.
Sweet. Yeah, well, I'll put it on my list for Tied to the Switch, because I do like those sorts of games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't like Ukulele as much as I thought I would.
No, I didn't either.
Don't think anyone did they?
Well, no, it got quite good reviews in the end. I thought they did quite a lot of work to it, and then it was better. But
I think they did some work to it, but it had a very low frame rate. Like Zach would have hated it. You know, it would have made him sick. It actually made me feel a little weird. And it was like buggy and hitchy. And it also, to me, the vibe on that game, just,
that was kind of the thing I'm talking about.
It didn't quite hit for me.
It kind of was like a bit like, it was trying to be like Minions, like the guy out of Minions. And it didn't really work.
They had the Ukulele and the Impossible Lair, which is more of a 2D style, you know, platformer game, and that's actually really way more polished.
I've got that on free on Epic Games, which again we don't talk about it on the show because we don't record shows. But Jesus Christ, the amount of games I've got on Epic Games now is ridiculous. It's just nonstop. Here's some more games this week. What is it? Oh, it's Watch Dogs 2 this week. Okay, I'll have that for free, I guess.
Now the question is, are you ever going to play Watch Dogs 2 on your PC?
Well, the reason I keep getting them all, you think, well, you do have to click on them and go click get. Yeah, it does take up about a minute out of your day every week.
It took you 3 PCs to try and run Skype.
You're right, that's complicated. But that's the whole thing, you know. Who knows in the future? I mean, at some point, I've considered it that I would just get a gaming PC and just like ask true consoles, just have a massive gaming PC at some point. I'm not looking to do that. My current PC is shit, and I need to replace it. But at some point, yeah, maybe I will. So why not collect these free games? You know, I may be a PC person in the future, especially the really good sort of indie games, stuff like Impossible Air. It's a good game. May as well get it. And then, then you got them there. If you ever decide you want to play them, but then you haven't got to buy them.
I remember to download or lock into my account a few games on there. I don't pay attention to it, and I usually sometimes I'll see a game where I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I could download that, and I literally won't even bother to do it because I'm like, I'll probably never play it on there. But there have been a few, like Into the Breach was one where I'm like, oh shit, that's free. Well, fuck, I do want to play that eventually. And then I think they had Civilization 6 or something free for a day or two. I was like, Jesus, that's crazy.
So yeah, there's a lot of really good games.
Yep.
And yeah, there'll be games that I've bought already and played already, but there's games that are just PC only that I would like to play at some point if I ever get a PC that's good enough to play them. So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely worth, I mean, just following their Twitter account or something, and you know, each week they'll announce what the games are going to be. You see when you want, just mail, go and add to your list. Why the hell not? You know, never know when you're going to get a good PC in the future. So free is free, man. And okay, I'm not.
You never know when you're just going to drop many hundreds of dollars on a PC. It could happen any moment.
It could. You never know. So yeah, we've talked about stuff really, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about our stuff. I mean, I could have elaborated on one of my Switch games, I guess, but people have already had to listen to us for what, 2 hours already, something like that. So that's that's absolutely enough, isn't it? So Yeah, and then now what do we do? Do we talk about the things like emails and shit? Is that what we do?
Yeah, do you guys mind if we take like a 2-minute break? I'm just going to stick something in the oven real quick.
Yeah, okay.
All right, just give me one moment here.
Thank you.
Oh, do you even edit the game or the show anymore? Or is this just all live? This is.
Well, I'll probably just leave it in because.
Yeah, well, fuck it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what are you putting in? Oh, he's going to be gone. He can't even tell us what he's
doing. I'll be right back. I'm doing chicken cordon bleu.
Blimey. Fancy. I just thought it'd be like a.
That means chicken and french fries.
I thought it was going to be a Ginster's pasty or something. Hot pockets, sorry. They have hot pockets over there, don't they? Is that the same thing? Hot pocket, like one of those slices that you get from Greg's.
They're both rank.
I had this pan. I don't bake a lot, but I had this pan in the drawer underneath the oven, and it just kind of never occurred to me. I guess I don't know why, and maybe this had never happened. But like when you turn on the oven and it gets hot, because I have a gas oven. Like it actually gets really hot down there. And one time I grabbed the pan with my bare hand and it was really fucking hot. Like I basically screamed. I was like, ah, you know, my cats all ran. Cause I was like, they don't hear me yell like that a lot. And then my neighbor actually called me and was like, dude, are you all right? Cause like, I had the windows open. So, I don't know if that's good or bad for the show that didn't happen this time. I'm happy it didn't.
Oh, it would have been a bit more interesting, but it's fine. I like you just the way you are.
would have provided some drama if you guys were just wondering if somebody had shot me when I was trying to bake.
So Rob, there's these ones from Derek that are from four months ago.
71 is probably best because that basically, well, there's two from 4 months ago, one from 9 months ago.
Yeah.
The first one from 4 months ago and the 71 is because we never did the one from 9 months ago.
Okay. So should I just play the 71 one then?
Yeah.
There we go. I've got it. Right. So, yes, we have a speakpipe here from Derek Sines from 4 months ago. There we go.
Hello, Boss Wave. It's Derek Sines back again. And I've just listened to your comeback show 246, which is entitled Pilcher's Island. And I'm expecting at least one more show from you before Christmas 2020 to help everyone through the OTLS, total lockdown syndrome. But since you seem to have abandoned your previous emails and speakpipes, I'm going to repeat part of what I said in my last speakpipe. And you have to remember it was sent around about Christmas 2019. But I think the things that I say in it still apply after listening to the last show, 246. So here goes. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in the hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The Bossway boys were dreaming on this fine Christmas Eve about video game presents they might yet receive. Pilch dreamt of Horizon Zero Dawn 2 and some new COD DLC, while Rob dreamt of a weirder new game, probably Japanese. And Chris MJW... well, it was obvious when you think about it. Mr. Williams was dreaming about some old retro shit. And that's it for now. So I just say, keep on gaming.
Nailed it.
Man, I would listen to Derek read Christmas stories.
Yeah. He's got a good voice for audiobooks. He should get a job at Audible and... yeah, that's a good thing. You should do that, Derek. He's right. I haven't mentioned the fact that I've been playing a lot of retro games as well, but that nobody wants to hear that, as always.
We started in our little chat that the three of us are in. Usually it's long discussions between me and Seth, and every now and again we just stick random pictures of retro shit in there to please Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been buying... like wireless controllers for my old consoles. 2.4G wireless controllers, so there's zero lag. And anybody that's interested in getting new, nobody asked, I know, new controllers for their old systems, if you get the 8-bit DOE M30, which is like the Genesis Mega Drive looking pad that's wireless. That is really lovely. It's only like 20 quid or something. And it's really nice. You can get a Bluetooth version, which works with like everything, like Switch and all sorts of stuff. And then there's like a 2.4G version that you can get with a specific dongle that works directly with like a Mega Drive or a Genesis and some other stuff maybe. And I recommend that pad. It's really comfortable and it just feels lovely. D-pad's lush. Just a really nice pad for no money. So recommend that. That's my shout out. I know we're not on shout outs yet, but I guess I'll shout out that control pad because it's awesome.
I know maybe a month or two ago, probably a couple months ago, I had talked about it. At some point, I am going to pick your brain and try to figure out, after all these years of all this retro stuff and all these different little options, and we've made our little, you know, side thing that plays emulators, and we got another one that's more official, and here's a controller, and here's an option, here's the Raspberry Pi, here's the blah, blah, blah. At some point, I am going to build one of those little fuckers, and I'm going to have you tell me, okay, this is your options here, this is what you should do.
Definitive.
Because I still would like the idea eventually of having something where, hey, I can load it with a bunch of retro games and have a little handheld. Like, that does, you know, I would actually use it. That actually is in my interest, but I'm always daunted by that because there always feels like there's 55 different options, and then a year from now there's going to be a better option, and then there's this, and then this is compatible, or that's not. And it's just like, I don't have enough of
It's changing all the time. I think the biggest thing that's changed in the last few months is the sort of cheap handhelds that come out of China, and they are getting really good for not a lot of money now, and a lot of them come with everything already on it, so you haven't even got to bother getting ROMs or anything like that. But there's one called the RG350 or 351P, I think it's, which is the newest version of it. And that, I've been meaning to get one of those. I don't really need it, but it's a handheld, but you can plug it in with HDMI so onto your TV, so you can play it on the TV as well. But that will run everything up to and including PlayStation. And there's a lot of those devices now. There's hundreds and hundreds of them. They just keep, there's like the BitBoys, which is like the cheap version, but they've got good versions coming out now as well. All sorts of different styles depending on what your preference is, like clamshell ones or whatever. But those are where it's at. But if you know, you can't go wrong with a Raspberry Pi. Like the Raspberry Pi 4 is out now, so that can now they've sort of got to grips with that, with RetroPie. That's the thing you install on it. That will basically do. Yeah, you just download it at one file, an image, and copy it onto an SD card, and off you go. It's done. And you just plug in a controller.
I got myself a Raspberry Pi a while ago, and I think it was just as the 4 was being released. And from what I understood, the 4, while more powerful than the 3, it still wasn't powerful enough to do any other retro game stuff that the 3 couldn't do.
Not particularly.
I just got the 3.
No, it doesn't do it. It really. I mean, you can. I think it does Dreamcast, which not many people are bothered about. It'll do. I mean, it does PlayStation better. Like, a lot of the PlayStation stuff was a bit hit and miss on the 3, depending on how you had your setup and whether you had dropping frames or whatever like that. So if you don't want to mess about with things, these new handhelds, I think they're releasing new iterations of them like every few weeks as well, so you could literally wait forever to get one. But they're at the point now where you could spend 60 quid or 70 quid on a really, really good one and be able to play all the games up to the PlayStation on a handheld with a really amazing screen with really nice controls and nice menu systems and everything without actually having to do any work. Okay, yeah, I think they generally come with a full stack of ROMs from like SNES and Mega Drive and 8-bit stuff, but they don't put the PlayStation ROMs on because they're obviously that much bigger. So you may, if you want PlayStation, you have to copy that crap on. But yeah, that's my my rant on retro stuff. And even though nobody asked for it. But yeah, thanks, Derek, for sending us a speak pipe, or three speak pipes from the look of it.
Sent us another one asking about if we had any recommendations for like game remakes. But I think we've possibly already covered that with things like Spyro and was it the new Super Lucky's Tale?
Oh, recommendations for retro remakes. Okay.
Retro remakes?
Well, just remakes, I suppose. The only one I can think of that I've been playing more recently was the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yeah, well, I did finish that as well. I don't think I ever talked about that, finishing that. I didn't enjoy that as much as I thought I would. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot of it, but there was so much in there that I didn't enjoy.
Ending was a bit convoluted.
When I finished playing it, I was a bit like, okay, well, I guess I've finished that now. There was bits of it where I was just really loving it, and think like the combat in that game was, I think it's some of the best combat I've had in a game in a long time.
They finally got the combat right in one of those games. They've been trying for years.
To move
away from turn-based, but this is the only time it's worked.
It was really, really enjoyable. A lot of the sort of little missions of walking around villages and stuff and collecting shit and finding shit was really dull.
It felt like they could have had more, but then it made it more interesting.
It just wasn't that interesting. It was a good game, but I guess
to his question, there's always the difference. Does he mean remakes for sure, or remakes or remasters? You know, because like there's lots of remasters out there from like THQ Nordic, who bought up all those different game series, and they're just releasing tons of remasters. And you know, some of them are good. And then remakes, you got like the Mafia Definitive Edition or whatever they're calling it coming out, where that's like a true remake of the early 2000s Mafia in the Mafia 3 engine. So that's kind of an interesting one.
That's interesting because they did actually do a remaster of. Is it Mafia 2? And it was abysmal.
Oh, why is it abysmal?
It was supposed to be really buggy and bad.
It's
not supposed to be very good at all.
Hopefully they'll patch it, because I mean, that's one of my favorite games. So I was planning on eventually probably replaying that, but the one that really caught my interest was a full remake of the original Mafia in a nice new engine with all the, you know, the nice visuals. I thought, oh, I might play that.
I mean, the Capcom Resident Evils have
got a lot of attention recently.
Yep.
Those are really good. I've started Resident Evil 2, actually. I've got about halfway into that and I haven't finished it for some reason.
I generally don't do remasters. Like I say, Demon's Souls was... I was absolutely loved that game, but I didn't... I've played it, so I have no real desire to play it again. So I only ever really play remasters when it's... I didn't play the original. So like the Yakuza Kiwami's games.
Usually that's the case for me, but if I really, really like a game, like if they remastered Psychonauts before Psychonauts 2, I would totally replay that. There's also the new Tony Hawk, which is a remake of the original. It's the
original 2, isn't it?
Yeah, I really want to play that game. I love the first two.
By the sounds of it, they've ended up putting some of the features from 2 into 1. Did 1 have manuals and stuff? I'm not sure.
I don't think it did. I didn't think manuals came until later than 2.
I think they're both. So it basically feels like one seamless game where it's just got the maps from 1 and 2.
Wasn't there just a rumor that there's going to be a full remake of the original Metal Gear?
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid. Yeah, you're right.
They're doing a collection, aren't they?
Collection for PC, but there was talk of a remake of them as well, of Metal Gear Solid, but that would be really good. I mean,
it's going to be made by Konami, so it'll be shit.
Well, maybe. I mean, there was that version for the GameCube, which I tried playing, and it just wasn't the same. The controls were all weird, and I don't know. It wasn't quite right.
Well, if it was Konami, presumably what they would do is just use the engine from Metal Gear Solid 5 and then just remake the original in it, you know, with a marginal team.
I don't think they have the ability. I mean,
less chance of screwing it up.
See what they did with Metal Gear Survive.
Yeah, I don't think they really.
I mean, also what they did with when they tried to make a new Contra game.
Yeah, well, those didn't go well.
It's just laughable.
Some more remasters that I've thought of that are good. Odin Sphere Lethrauser. I've talked about that on the podcast before. That is an amazing game. That's the VanillaWare one. So it's side-scrolling, sort of RPG brawler. That's really good. Shadow of the Colossus was good. The remake of that.
Yeah,
worth a look.
Well, anything from Blue Point. Blue Point, right?
There's Blue Point doing the Demon's Souls.
Yeah. So they're really good.
I would love to see Blue Point do Psychonauts. That'd be great.
I'd like them to be able to make an original game. Maybe they're just... I don't know if they just don't have the desire to...
It's got
to
be frustrating for some of them.
Because they clearly have the ability, certainly the technical ability, to make games, but... it could be interesting to see what they could come up with.
You'd have to think the actual, I mean, obviously they're very technically proficient, and you would have to think making so many different types of remasters, they still, if as long as, well, because some of them, it seems like it essentially is the original engine, and then they're just technically bringing it, you know, visually way forward. And then some of them, they're basically just rebuilding the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, Demon's Souls looks like it's from the ground up almost.
It seems like it would have to be in that
case. Well, Link's Awakening as well, that is complete from the ground up, but it's that's another one I would really like to play.
Yep. But in those cases, when they have to rebuild it from the ground up, well, then they're actually getting a lot of technical proficiency in how to create those battle systems and stuff. And so you'd think Bluepoint would, to your point, have a lot of experience now in all kinds of different types of games and elements and battle systems and cameras and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, if they had just the right writing crew and kind of creatives they hire on, no reason they couldn't make a great game.
Hmm.
Yeah, tricky. But Spyro the Dragon and Tony Hawk's, I think those two, the two that float my boat most out of all of them. I need to buy Tony Hawk's is like 40 quid though, and wait till it comes down in the sale and buy it then. I haven't got time to play it now anyway.
But that's, I assume it would really go down sale relatively quickly.
Yeah, me too. But that's one thing I would really, really like to play. I absolutely played the shit out of it. 1, 2, and 4, the ones I've played just a lot back in the day. And I've tried some of the other ones as well, and I've enjoyed them. They're good, just good games. Fun.
Just not 5.
No, that was a shit one, wasn't it? Yeah. All right. That's it. We did it, I think. Should we call it a day?
I think we've recorded enough content to basically cover whoever's covered for the rest of the year now.
Well, that's it. If you're only listening 10-minute chunks, 10 minutes a week, that should be about right. So just ration us, everybody, if you really, really want to listen to us. You're weird. Yeah, we're done. That's cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. Anything else to say, anybody? Have you anyone got any shout outs or any otherwise comments and things to say?
I was going to shout out Derek for being patient with us.
I could shout out Stu Leck and Matthew Bolzanello. I've talked to both of them. Matthew, he had messaged me, I think from listening to the show, or maybe he and I had chatted about it in messages like from a year ago or something. And he had commented that he didn't really like the new style of Assassin's Creed. I think if I remember correctly, like he was sort of yearning for the older, more original Assassin's Creed style. And then he messaged me on Xbox saying like that he actually had recently gotten really into Odyssey and was putting in tons of hours. And it was one of those things where I saw the message and I think I was even mid response. And then my Xbox got shut off, or I did something else and I totally forgot about it. And I ended up responding to him like 4 or 5 months later, but I'm glad he's enjoying the game. It's a great game. But also I had put it in the show notes here. I don't know if you guys ever got kind of more details about it or whatever, but I just wanted to shout out Amras. That was so sad and tragic.
What I was going to say, yeah. And yeah, I mean, we haven't recorded since that happened. So yeah, so long Amras. It's the saddest thing.
Did you ever get to meet him, Seth?
No, I never met him in person, but
we recorded with him a couple of times, didn't we?
Yeah, he was on the show, and I speak pipes, and I feel like at some point I was in an Xbox chat with him at some point. I mean, I've met him. I just haven't like met him in person, but
yeah. I mean, it's so weird that we did actually get to meet him in person at EGX.
Right, recently, yeah. Yeah. It's this time last year, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to be there, but I was not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thoughts still with his family and close friends. And that really sucks out of the blue, really. I mean, I know he wasn't the health, you know, he was unwell, but it's still a major shock. So,
with
family.
Yeah, definitely. All of his family and then Dan, right?
Yeah.
If he's listening by chance, but yeah, just best wishes. And any, you know, it sounds trite, but it's an awful thing. And he was a really nice guy. I mean, you know, you just meet somebody here and there, and we have this community. But people stand out as just genuinely really nice individuals sometimes, salt of the earth kind of people. And he's just a really, really, really like well-intentioned, sweet, nice guy, you know,
just the sweetest guy you could ever meet. And that's why I was so happy to be able to meet him, because, you know, you knew he was like that, but just from talking to him, and there was, you know, it was just, there's not a bad bone in his body. He was just the loveliest person to meet. And it was just, yeah, it was lovely. So, sad time. And yeah. So yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know really how to move on from that, sensibly. So I think we'll call that the end of the show. And you know, who knows when we're going to be back to record another one.
Yeah. I was going
to
say, I suggest not tempting fate and reading out the contact details.
Yeah, let's not even bother.
Hey, follow me at Magic Lozenge, man. I need some followers. No, I don't. Honestly, I don't give a shit. Don't follow me. I don't care.
I don't think I've tweeted anything in fucking ages either.
Well, yeah. I mean, if whatever, we'll do a show if we feel like doing one. Maybe. I mean, yeah, Pilch couldn't be here. Obviously, he's managed to secure himself an Xbox X or whatever they're called. The powerful Xbox is he's been playing
Series X, Chris. The Series X.
Aren't they all part of the Series X? Oh, God knows.
No, the Series X and Series S. Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough that S sounds quite similar to X.
Hang on, is it a series or is it just one of them?
Well, they're claiming it's the family. It's a family. So I don't know if possibly in the future, the next one will be still part of the Series X.
See, here's what Xbox did, and it's funny how these decisions really can reverberate for a long time. They decided to call the second version of their second system the 360, which is a stupid name. We're all used to it now, so it's fine. It was a great system, you know, it had its day, but they named it the 360, and you know why they called it that? They even, like, there were rumors, they kind of admitted it, because they didn't want to call it the Xbox 2, because then it was competing against the PlayStation 3, and they felt that it sounded inferior, because it's some stupid marketing bullshit. So they got in the stupid naming conventions of the Xbox 360, and then the Xbox One, what a stupid fucking name. They should have just had a name, like, I remember there was a rumor back then, it was going to be like the Xbox Infinite or something like that.
Well, didn't they, the thing is, all of their consoles have always had like project names that have generally been better than the actual name that they ended up going with.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and that happens a lot. Even when Nintendo used to have that, it'd be like Project Dolphin, you know, and then it became the GameCube, and then it was Project whatever, you know.
Revolution.
Yeah, exactly. And in the case of Xbox, like even xCloud, that's what everybody calls it now. It's called xCloud. Well, they've said like that was just the prototype name, and now it's just kind of part of Game Pass. It's like, no, you guys are taking away an actual recognizable name of xCloud. Why the fuck would you not use that? I don't know. It's very strange. But they got in this bad naming conventions. They called it the Xbox One, which was even more confusing because sometimes people still kind of refer to the original Xbox as like the Xbox One or the Xbox, you know, like, yeah, so stupid. And then they got the Xbox One X, the Xbox One S, and now, ostensibly, what they're saying is now they're just going back to calling it Xbox. That's actually what the point is. Now it's just Xbox, except now it's the Series X and the Series S, and then there'll be a Series something else and a Series something else. And they're all just Xbox, except in reality, it's just more confusing and it's very stupid.
I feel like it's the equivalent of like when you're walking around a park and they've made like a really big windy path, and then there's a dirt path where everyone's walked straight across. It's like they're trying to get people to do a certain thing, but everyone's just going to do the thing. So no one's going to just call it the Xbox. They're going to call it the Series X because they're used to calling it different things. And in the same way, when they got all shirty when people started calling it the X-Born.
Yeah.
Although I personally think that's why they called it the Xbox One X, because then the acronym basically became Xbox.
Yeah, but that, you know, I just refer to mine as the One X. That's why I always say the One X, and now it'll be, yeah, the Series X, and yeah, whatever. I mean, it in the end doesn't matter that much, but it does matter when there's consumer confusion. And again, this goes into the fanboy things. I've seen Xbox apologists just say like, oh, this is just clickbait. You know, it's not confusing. It's so ridiculous to say it's confusing. It's like, listen, I'm not confused, but there are smart people out there who are confused because they don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, and it is confusing. So, it's a dumb naming convention. I wish they would have fixed that. But in the end, you know, in the end, it's sitting by your TV and it's a box and it's going to play games, whatever. But
how did we end up here again? Are we back at the start of the show? We've done an Xbox 360. And
it has been long enough to loop. That.
Well, maybe we should start over. You guys want to start from the top?
Well, I mean, it was rubbish, so we can maybe just do it again. Anyway, I guess that's the end of the show. So anyone still here, bye. Thank you for listening. see you next time in Christmas or whatever. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. I forgot that I used
to... We love you more.
Felch doesn't like that.
Yeah, he deleted after showing us, didn't he?
He deleted what?
We love you more.
Wait, what do you mean? Like...
He didn't like it.
He used to be on the show notes, and Chris never read it out, so Pilch deleted it.
Yeah, Pilch did some house cleaning at some point.
So I don't care if he deleted it from the show notes. I thought you meant he edited it out from when I had said it once or something.
Oh, no.
Like, hey, who started this show, Seth, buddy? That's my catchphrase.
Yeah. So I didn't say Pilch has been playing Call of Duty. I think he said he's been playing COD the whole time, so he didn't have anything to say anyway.
So basically, Derek was exactly right on everything.
Yeah.
So you did actually manage to get in touch with Pilch eventually then?
Yeah. He came back to me. He's working three nights a week, so he could probably do another show.
He's still at Tesco, isn't he?
I assume so.
He picked a good time for it, really, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah.
I'll stop recording.
Yeah, stop recording.
Are we going to put some game music in?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. What should we put in?
I just think we could put the theme from the new Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Shocker.
Fucking hell.
But it's from Jesper Kidd, one of the original composer, and it's really good.